on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, about the right-to-work legislation that's being rammed through our state legislature as we speak. I'm still worried. I think this is going to get a lot of traction. This is going to get a lot of play. But it's going to be an opportunity to reach out to folks and explain exactly why it is a bad idea to pursue this kind of stuff. And some interesting studies out today that we'll also talk about. In the second hour, we're going to talk with Mike Kenzall, a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. He's going to talk a little bit about the budget. This budget thing is just nuts. The Republicans dying to have the shutdown. They can't wait. They're like little schoolgirls, giddy at the opportunity to make this president look bad. Also in the second hour, something that I think should make the president look bad. We're going to talk with Lori Wallach from Public Citizen about this Colombian free trade agreement, which, you know, interesting scenarios here. There's Democrats who are against it. There's got to be Tea Party people who are against this. After all, trade was one of the things that they're ranting about, the outsourcing of jobs, one of the things that they ranted about in November. So it should be interesting to see where they fall on this. And in the third hour, Griffin Buell, he's a student at Evergreen State University out in Washington, going to talk about the fact that I think they're still there in the Capitol in Olympia, Washington, protesting the budget cuts that their governor is proposing and their legislature is proposing, not the governor. Billions of dollars in cuts to education, massive cuts to social programs. Sound familiar? Kind of just what's going on here. And the reason I think it's important to talk to folks in Washington, because you know what? They've taken to their capital. And they're not leaving until their voices are heard, which again is something that I've said has to happen here. So, when finals are done and all of those college kids go home for the summer and can't find jobs because they aren't there, a good place to go camping, right here in Harrisburg, right here at the Capitol. Anyway, that's my thought. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the big news today, still no budget, still no movement, and I guess there has been movement. The Republicans keep moving. They make an agreement, they break an agreement. We're on the same page, we're not on the same page. But this afternoon, I don't know if you saw that the House passed a stopgap bill, 247-181. Even though the White House said, you know what, if you send that to me with all those riders in it, we're going to veto it. But again, this is a 1 week spending bill. They want to slash another $12 billion. But here's the reality: the reality is the Republicans have put this out there to make to make it look like they're trying to compromise. They want to appear like they're doing everything they can while in the background. And you can see Boehner out there with a silly smirk on his face going, oh, we don't want to shut the government down, while he's all tingly in the panties and he can't wait. And while they're saying we don't want to shut the government down, they keep changing what they're agreeing to. They keep changing what they say they're willing to agree to. First it was $31 billion, then they agreed to, then it was like $40 billion. They don't know what they want. And this is really the stuff that's only being reported. We don't know what kind of nonsense is going on behind the doors. So look, understand. Now, these folks, these Republicans cannot be trusted. They want to shut this government down just to appease their teetwizzlers. Because the teetwizzlers have some twisted idea that by shutting things down, they're going to be able to slash spending and make the country the way it ought to be with no government whatsoever. They want to revisit 1995. And if you go back to 1995 and you remember what it was about, it's the same thing that's going on now. The same thing. Their blind faith, bizarre ideology. A couple of stories that we came across back in the Denver Post, November 15th of 95. Gingrich and Dole are offering the funding and higher debt bills, but have loaded them with riders such as the Medicare bill that the president won't accept, and with other items such as limits on appeals for death row inmates. The New York Times in November of 95 said one of the largest spending bills for the Commerce, Justice, and State Departments is being negotiated because it has riders on social issues like school prayer. The spending bill for the District of Columbia has been bogged down over the provision to borrow federal money to pay for abortions in the district, and it would prevent public hospitals and clinics from providing abortion services. Does this sound familiar? Does it sound familiar at all? This is 1995. They could have been written today. Newswire, December of 95, Congress has been unable to send any bills to the president because of the excessive number of anti-environmental riders. Does this sound familiar? It's the same thing over and over again. And they want to redo. They want to replay this whole scenario over and over again until eventually they win. And now they think they may. They think they control enough of the media so that they can spin it how they want it spun so that they look like the good guys. But understand, people are going to see through this. People are going to understand that they want this again. The funding bill passed by Republican-controlled House, it has more than 80 unrelated policy riders in it. More than 80. From abortion to net neutrality to environmental regulations, it is a laundry list of social engineering on their part. And what's interesting is even Senator Tom Coburn, who can be not described anywhere close to being a liberal, he's urged his party to drop these policy riders and not allow the government to be shut down. In fact, yesterday he came out and said, quote, "My recommendation to my friends in the House is, you know, it's highly unlikely many riders are going to get passed, so why don't you take the spending cuts and let's get on with the budget?" And that's where I'm at. Okay, we've bought into this whole spending cut idea. Make some cuts, move it along. Here very soon, the 2012 budget has to be being talked about. We're not even done with this one yet. But at the end of this, it's the Republicans who want this showdown. They want the rematch. Republicans absolutely want this. And if you look at a recent Gallup poll, it shows that Americans overall want compromise. 58% of us want a compromise compared to 33% who said, "Oh, you stay the hard line and, you know, stick it to them." The Republicans want it. 51% of them want the hard line. They want the shutdown. They want stick to your guns. Democrats, who basically, again, are willing to cede ground pretty much on anything, 68% of them want a compromise. The independents, 60% of the independents want a compromise. Who doesn't? The Tea Party. Who dominates the Republican Party right now? The Tea Twizzlers. A CNN poll found 62% of the Tea Twits want to shut it down. They want to shut government down. So the question is what does a shutdown mean at a time when we're trying to work our way out of the Bush recession? Because we're still not out of the woods yet. What does it mean moving forward? What do we lose? The reality is you shut the government down, we're going to slow down economic growth. And Goldman Sachs has come out with an analysis saying that a shutdown could shave 0.2% off the gross domestic product for every week that this goes on. So is this good for jobs? Not at all. Is this good for the economy? Is it good for revenue? Is it good? No, it's not. In fact, it's bad for the housing market as well because understand who insures and guarantees many of the single-family mortgages. That's right. The FDA, or the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration. So that's gonna screw things up. Right now, being April 7th, going into the 8th, tax time's coming. It's gonna block some refunds. So they're saying about $42.1 billion in refunds to about 14 million taxpayers gonna be held up. And most of those refunds go to people like you and me, who are gonna take that money, put it back into the economy. So even more slowing. It's going to increase our deficits. Understand that. Because everything's going to start to rise. We're going to start to see an inflationary push. There's been a bunch of writing on this. We got troubles coming. The small business loans that the Republicans want, those are going to be shut down because the Small Business Administration stopped. So no more loan processing, none of that. Gone. Done. Understand that the Small Business Administration approves about $50 million. In small business loans every single day. That's going to stop. So remember what they keep telling you. We want to help the job creators. Well, they're not helping the job creators very much by shutting off the Small Business Administration, by taking money out of working class people's pockets for the short term. Not working. Some of the other things that could come up, what we're going to see is no more SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, no more investigations there. So, some shenanigans on Wall Street might be happening. Though for those folks who are about ready to retire, looking for Social Security, their enrollments are going to be backlogged, which means long term it's going to cost more money to catch up. More people are going to have a difficult time with that. Safety inspections on the job are going to be stopped, which means, hey, business friendly. We don't have to put any ventilation in those mines or do anything other than run coal like Don Blankenship would like you to have. So some workers may be at risk. They're saying that the tourist industry around the national parks are going to be hurt, which accounts for about $32 million every day. And 800,000 federal workers are going to be let go. So that's trouble. And what you've got is you've got the tea-twizzlers who are just all giddy and all tingly in the panties that they're going to make Obama look bad. And that's what this is really about. It's not about getting spending under control. Our spending isn't really the problem. We've got a revenue problem. This is about making the Democrats look weak. This is about Obama look soft. And to his credit on this, he's taking a stand saying, no more. We're getting a budget. We're going to do it now. You're going to work through it. Or we're going to go down this hard road that you guys evidently want. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. There's a meeting convening, I guess, right about now at the White House. So it should be interesting to see where this goes. We will be following it through the night. But I'd like to know what you have to think. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin working families rose to the challenge of their first big political ballot box test since Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights began in February. Voters defeated a self-described conservative state Supreme Court justice. But as Jesse Russell reports, that razor-thin victory must still withstand a recount.
Tuesday saw historic spring elections in Wisconsin with both supporters and opponents of Governor Scott Walker on the edge of their seats, waiting for results from what should have been a mundane race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Going into the race after the primary election in February, incumbent Justice David Prosser was the hands-on favorite. having pulled in 55% of the vote over his second-highest leading opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, who only received 25% of the vote. After Walker introduced legislation that would limit collective bargaining rights for state workers, and Prosser indicated he supported Walker's efforts, the race became electrified. With all precincts reporting on Wednesday, Kloppenburg held a 204-vote lead. A recount is likely. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate said the results from Tuesday sent a signal to the state.
Clearly, the results from yesterday's election represent a watershed moment for Wisconsin and a Waterloo for Scott Walker.
The energy from Tuesday's election is now expected to be passed on to eight attempts to recall Senate Republicans who voted with Walker. Stephanie Taylor is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Big victories in target districts like Randy Hopper and Dan Capangi. It looks like Joanne Kloppenburg took over 55% of the vote in Robert Cole's district and over 55% in Luther Olson's district. So this bodes very, very well for the recall campaigns against the Republican state senators.
America's labor movement says it's deeply disappointed that the Obama administration has signaled it will move in the near future to submit the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement to vote in Congress. The AFL-CIO says the level of violence in Colombia is still unacceptable for trade unionists and human rights defenders. With the murders of union activists and oppressive conditions facing workers trying to organize there, the AFL says it remains strongly opposed to the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the Labor Federation appreciates the Obama administration's efforts to negotiate a separate action plan to try and address human and labor rights concerns, but that plan doesn't go far enough and doesn't guarantee an end to violence against workers trying to organize in Colombia. 51 trade unionists were murdered in Colombia last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
So we're singing, hey, John Kasich, don't sell us out.
Hey,
Ohio, stand up and shout.
Well, that's the song for the SB5 fight in Ohio. People have taken to the Capitol and... at the end of this, it's going to come down to the referendum vote. It's going to come down to people getting out to the polls. And they're kicking their fight off this weekend, this Saturday, to get that on the ballot. So we're going to be following that, going to get some people to talk about what's going on there. But right here at home, we've got some problems of our own this week. Daryl Metcalf, the corporate tool that he is, and Sam Rohrer, the Koch brother boy, brought forth their right-to-work legislation, or as I've been calling it, your no-rights-at-work agenda, because they want to take your rights away. And selling this false bill of goods, and I can't get this guy from Carlisle out of my head, this John Mumma. This clip just blows me away. Evidently not. We're basically saying all the good things will come once we vote for right-to-work legislation, all the good stuff. What's that? Infant mortality rates going higher? Education going lower? That's good stuff. That's why I've asked Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, to come talk to us a little bit about that and the agenda that's being pushed by the radical right. Frank, thanks for taking time for me.
You got it, Rick. The radical right, huh? I got some other words for him, but that's all right. Let's go with that for this evening. We're on a little earlier. I'm on a little earlier this evening, so I'll keep it clean.
There you go. Here's the thing. There's part of me that thinks this is just Metcalf trying to fill his coffers by getting some of the crazy money. This is Rohrer trying to build an email list for the Koch brothers, and his possible run, showing his allegiance, to the radicals in Washington. But there's another part of me that's pretty worried.
We take nothing for granted, Rick. And in I know you've played whack-a-mole at the carnivals, and that's really what we feel that we've been dealing with for the last few weeks. We hit the mole on the head with our mallet, and another one pops up, and we hit it, and another one pops up, and we hit it, and it's just it doesn't end. So this right to work for less, or however you want to frame it, is just really another pathetic excuse, I think. Well, an excuse to probably get the money that you're talking about. This is not anything that we haven't seen every session that's been introduced by this guy. And here he is again. He has 37, I think, co-sponsors or something like that, someplace in the 30s. We don't make light of it. But also, I think that in Pennsylvania, we're ready for it. This is it's a lesson in hypocrisy, if your listeners can grasp exactly what he's doing with this. And it's a shame that it's come up again, because no matter who you voted for or what your party affiliation is, on November, I think anyway, that there was a referendum that the voters said that they wanted change, and the change really had to go towards the job market.
Absolutely.
And this is a complete distraction from the job market. This has nothing to do with trying to create jobs. It has nothing to do with trying to improve our transportation or our infrastructure or our education. It's all about Daryl Metcalf and his twisted scheme to strip worker rights again.
But my question, I guess I have in this, is, and I think accurately you portrayed what I thought November was about as well. It was about jobs. How is this going to create jobs? How is this going to move the economy forward? To me, this is just taking us backwards to the 1890s.
It is taking us backwards. I mean, I'll certainly put all the statistics that you want to see, verifiable, factual statistics, not some of the stuff that you've seen that's been put out there. It's almost as laughable as voodoo economics, because there's nothing that I've seen that supports or substantiates any of the figures that they have been out there touting. The reality is, it's actually it's going to weaken the purchasing power in Pennsylvania for workers. There's just no question about the statistics that show you that that we're talking about, on average, about $60 more per week in Pennsylvania than probably 20 of the 22 states that have right-to-work laws already. There is a big difference. You have to weigh in health care. You weigh in safety and health. I mean, it's not just about the economics of it. As I said, there's a lot of other things that go with it. But I want you to think about it this way, Rick, and I hope that the listeners will think about it this way also. But let's just imagine for a moment, if we were to be in the Daryl Metcalf world, and if, in fact, the political district, the House district, the state House district in which he is, in that Cranberry area in Butler County in northwestern Pennsylvania, and if it was to be operating in the same fashion as the legislation he's proposing, well, then I would submit that if I lived in that district and I didn't vote for him, then maybe I'd want to have my share back of his salary, because I didn't vote for him.
Right.
And why should I have to be paying his salary? And then think about this, that I have a whole host of other public officials from the local level, maybe a local commissioner, a local mayor. I might have a congressperson or a U.S. senator. I have those folks to represent me. Do I really need him to represent me? I didn't vote for him. I don't want him. I don't need him. So I prefer to have my share of my taxes to go to him back. And if I ever decide that I do need him, well, I know that he has to represent me, because as long as I live in the district, that's how the law is, just like a free rider. And that's the same kind of an analogy that, I submit to you that is that your listeners maybe can kind of get a grasp on. And, I would just love to hear somebody talk about the figures that they're putting out there. And so maybe we should all go to the office of these 30-something co-sponsors and ask for our share back, because we didn't vote for them, and we certainly don't support right to work legislation.
But if you go right down the line, that is their ideology. They would probably agree with you. They you shouldn't have to pay them. It is their ideology that they should get everything for free.
and only be able to pay for the things that they absolutely want and push the responsibility onto someone else, which I've always found interesting that the party that touts personal responsibility and this individual responsibility, they're the first ones who want to be the free riders and mooch off everybody else, be it being a part of a union or be it the health care bill or anything else. That's what they want. They want to be able to on the way to the hospital, oh, we'll sign up for insurance now.
Well, you're exactly right. They're signing up for insurance as the house is burning down. It's a little bit late for that. But you're probably right to an extent. But if, for example, 30% of the electorate did not vote for Daryl Metcalf in that district, and by my math, and just quick math, I'm figuring that the refund due to every person who would like to have that refund, it comes to about $2. So if 30,000 people didn't vote for Metcalf, well, then I think it gets a little bit different for him, and if it's going to impact him that way financially. So then I think that's probably where he draws the line that, well, not so fast.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. But what they're doing, and I've had a couple of conversations with people who really don't have any stake in the game whatsoever other than being an observer from outside, and what they're hearing is the flowery language that's coming from the radicals. I play this clip for you from Jack Zimmer of the ABC, which, again, I got to be honest, I find rather hysterical.
Oil go from $80 or $90 a barrel down to $15 a barrel in the late 80s. That was not a fun time. And I also saw it rebound to $85. You can't imagine the size and the depth and the breadth of an economic boom in a right-to-work state.
So, my friend, these people hear this and, oh, my goodness, I can't imagine what a big boom and how that would be. And I tried to explain what that kind of a boom would mean. That would mean that the people who own the wells, the owners would do very well, and the workers, well, they wouldn't have a voice.
The workers absolutely wouldn't have a voice. And, you know, but this is just exactly what they do. They take and they twist the truth. It's about these sound bites. I don't know if they go to Madison Avenue or whoever comes up with some of these sayings and some of these bits. And you know, if it wasn't really so serious, that soundbite would be laughable, but it is serious business, and we take every one of these issues seriously. You know, we don't believe for a minute that we should sit back and expect that, oh my, that this is not that big of a deal. It is a big deal, but we want to have folks get focused on, you know, really again the issues at hand. This is not an issue at hand. Let's talk about job creation. Let's talk about you know, safety and health at work. Let's talk about a voice at work. You know, these things right here just have absolutely nothing to do with balancing a budget. And, you know, once again, you know, we can use so many different analogies and we can have a little bit of fun with it. You know, and just a slight digression, because I know that you've been talking about this budget. You know, and it's like everything is for sale. Maybe we ought to sell to Capital, right? I mean, if we're thinking like they are, let's sell everything off.
Yep.
And do they really have to work there? Maybe we could make it one big casino, the Capital Casino.
There you go.
This is the kind of ridiculous, you know, fix that they're trying to look at. Sell it all.
The only problem with that, Frank, is that the state of Arizona already beat them to it, and we found out that they sold their buildings and leased them back, and it's going to cost them hundreds of millions more over the long haul.
It's simply just incredible. And again, I look at this, you know, we look at the issues that are out there. It's one after another, and every one of them requires us to fight, and, you know, but we're up for it. I thought that things didn't have to be this way. I thought that we had proposed some common sense solutions, alternatives to cutting jobs, to slashing services, and we're going to continue to do those kinds of things out there.
Now, I was going to ask you, were you surprised by this?
Oh, my goodness. This is how we were warned it would be. There's no surprise whatsoever. None whatsoever.
Yeah, because I look at this, and it's frustrating on a number of levels because, again, they haven't created any jobs. Everything they talk about, the governor in his budget address talked about cutting 1,500 jobs. I don't know how that's good for the economy. Talking about cutting $1 billion from education, 56% from higher education, cuts down the line that I don't see how this is helping the economy.
Well, you're right. Not one job. Not one job is being created. In fact, you put people out of work, and that just it continues to be more of a drag on the economy. You know what the statistics have been in Pennsylvania. We have flirted with double-digit unemployment for over 2 years now. And the folks that have found jobs, fortunately, some of them, we still are looking at about $500,000 a month, but some of the ones that have found jobs, the jobs aren't the same. They're not what they used to make. They're not used to the same type of earnings and benefit packages. And again, it all continues to have a trickle-down factor on the entire economy around us. You know, folks are affected by this. Manufacturing continues to lose the jobs. No, I have not heard a plan in any of this to how we're going to create jobs. Let's not just create jobs, but save and protect the jobs that we have here in Pennsylvania.
I mean, my problem with the budget is that it's so narrow-minded, so short-sighted, that it doesn't take anything into effect of the disaster that they're creating 10, 20 years down the road by failing to educate our young people.
And, you know, but you're exactly right. And all these are really a death of 1,000 cuts. Like, we're talking about a deficit from between $4 and $5 billion. None of these even comes close. However, and you know I'm going to go there, we sit there and we have a solution in Marcellus Shell.
Absolutely.
And we're going to continue to ignore this. Well, I'll tell you what, we're not going to ignore it. We're going to do everything we can to rally the folks. Over 70% now, as of today, over 70% of Pennsylvanians say tax it. And, you know, and probably some of the 70% of those, Rick, are probably some of the drillers. Let's tax it and let's move on. Let's get on with this.
Yeah, they don't want the black eye that's coming out of this. They don't want to keep getting beat up. They want to fly under the radar like most businesses do. They want to exploit whatever they can. They don't want to be a front and center. They don't.
Here's what I'm hoping, that if any of your listeners are amongst that minority that believes that we should not tax Shell, I wish they would call in and, you know, we can have a conversation and talk about it and what's their rationale, what's their reasoning behind this, because I'm really curious. I would like to know, because I honestly would believe that 99% of Pennsylvanians would want to see people pay their fair share.
Yeah, and I've yet to find anyone in talking to them face-to-face who's against taxing the drillers, since we're already paying the tax. It's not like we're not, it's they're going to add it on. We're already paying it. It's just we're not getting the benefit from it. And I've yet to find anyone who's against closing the Delaware loophole that allow the profits of the companies in this state to flee, the big ones, while small businesses are stuck pulling the freight.
Totally, totally. You and I, like all of your listeners, pay our taxes. And we expect nothing more than everybody else to pay their taxes as well. No free ride, right?
Yep. No free ride, but that seems to be the Republican mantra. We want something for nothing. Last word here before we wrap up. You know, I'm looking at this attack, this no rights agenda at work that they've got, no rights at work agenda that they're pushing. This is an opportunity, I do believe, to reach out to union members, to their families, and say, look, they are coming after you. Maybe you've supported sane, rational Republicans in the past. Maybe you need to get involved in your party. Maybe you need to rethink your party. But I think there's an opportunity here.
There is an opportunity. Their agenda continues to be what? An attack on collective bargaining, attack on unions, attack on the middle class is really what it comes down to. And I think that there are opportunities here. We're going to take advantage of them. You know, we're not going to sit idly by and expect nothing comes from this. Every time something like this is introduced, it should be considered to be a threat. And it's certainly, again, we're going to poise it as what it is. It is just a complete unnecessary attack on working families at the worst time, at the worst possible time, when really we should be trying to lift people up and not tear them down with legislation like this that has nothing to do with balancing a budget and getting Pennsylvania working again. I, for one, would like to have my $2, okay, you know, because as I take a look, and I'm going to ask your listeners to, you know, ask their $2 back, too. If they did not vote for any of those 30-some folks, and we will post that on our website. Certainly you can get it online as well. And I'm quite certain that Representative Metcalf has it clearly on his website. So take a look. Take a look and see who the folks are that are really trying to do the most damage to you. And the shame of it is, Rick, out of those 30-some, I think there's probably about a half dozen freshmen that they've already poisoned and talked into this kind of nonsense.
Probably because they really just don't know. And I say people have to get to the streets. That's why this Monday, April 11th, 11:30 a.m., there's a rally against the right-to-work legislation that's being pushed. The Teamsters and a bunch of other groups are coming out 11:30 on Monday the 11th. Also, May 3rd, 1 p.m., the Clear Coalition is having their rally here in Harrisburg as well. I say get out in the streets and have your voice heard. Frank, I appreciate your time, brother.
Two big events coming up. You're exactly right. The Teamsters, they know how to rock and roll, and we're looking forward to really just getting everybody at the Capitol on May 3rd. Come on out. We're going to have a lot of fun with this.
All righty. Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Thanks so much. Have a great night.
See you, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show.
Good news, people. America's wages are up. The average worker is making more today than a year ago. How much more, you ask? Get ready to be excited. 58 cents a week. Of course, averages don't tell the whole story. Economist John Kenneth Galbraith graphically explained the problem of averages with a story about a 6-foot-tall man who drowned when wading across a stream with an average depth of 3 feet. Similarly, while average workers are trying to decide how to spend those extra 5 dimes, a nickel, and 3 pennies they're getting each week, your average CEO is wallowing in an extra $860,000 this year over last. That's just the increase in their bonuses. It does not include their multimillion-dollar salaries, which are also up, nor their golden pensions, free health care, limousines, corporate jets, etc. And, as you might imagine, many corporate chieftains did much better than average in their bonus checks. Take Robert Iger of Walt Disney, Inc. He pocketed a bonus of $13.5 million this year, 45% more than he got a year ago. Well, explained his PR agent, bonuses provide incentives for excellent executive performance, and Iger deserves his riches this year because Disney's profits are up by 24%. Swell, but why is his increase double that increase in profits? And by the way, Robert's salary is $2 million a year. Why does he need any extra incentive to do his job? One more question. Does Iger really think that he alone produced Disney's rise in profits? Notice that the animators, performers, and other hard-working employees at Disney World and Disney Studios got no 45% increase in their pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, no one goes to Disney World to see Robert Iger. If he wants bonus money, tell him to put on a Mickey Mouse costume in the wilting heat of Florida summer and earn it. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Got an email today. Of course, you can email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. Rick writes me, I agree 100% with you on the fact that we have a revenue problem. Corporations are doing nothing more than rate shopping, just as a car buyer would do when financing a vehicle. They'll move from state to state to save a buck. Bucks in the form of laying off employees at the higher pay scales, privatizing at the state level, fueled by the obscene tax breaks that will be shouldered by the unsuspecting residents of the state du jour. Whichever way it is, he says, the result's the same. Move the pieces on the board and cut costs. Meanwhile, the uneducated and unknowing masses fight each other, thinking that the real solution And the real causes of their troubles is someone getting something for nothing, i.e. social programs. And you have the rich who laugh all the way to the bank or to their yacht, and the poor working class saps pick up the tab. Hell, high gas prices, he says, keep the riffraff off the road, an extra bonus. And, you know, we talked about, this is kind of what we've been talking about. And when they had that right-to-work little presentation, one of the guys actually stood up and said, well, you know, Carlisle Tire and Wheel is leaving because of the unions. It's those unions that are making them leave. It wasn't the $34 million that the state of Tennessee dangled to them as a carrot in our tax dollars that brought them down there. No. It was those union people. The threat of maybe they'll unionize. What a jagoff. Let's go to the phones. I got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Oh, I don't know, man. You know, it's a never-ending battle, isn't it?
I hear you.
Between Wisconsin pulling 7,000 votes out of midair and manufacturing a steal of the election out there, that's another big mess.
Yeah, we're going to buy that.
Yeah, really. I don't know, man. You know, I'll just tell everybody, you know, I've called you before. You know, I've dealt with the right-to-work states all my life, and I've been in a union in a right-to-work state, and even on a unionized job, you don't get the kind of money that you should get. I originally worked at, like I said, at Cape Canaveral. When I first started there, I was making $5.25 an hour. That was half of the journeyman's salary at the time. Those boys, last I knew, they were at 16. Of course, the way things have been the last few years, I wouldn't doubt if they hadn't been knocked back down to 14. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's still out there, but they showed a back when Michael Eisner was running Disney World, he made a they had a film a video of him telling his shareholders that he didn't think that there was any construction worker in the world worth more than $12, and he'd never pay more than $12. And as far as I know, he never has.
Yep, he hasn't. You know, here's the thing, though, and the question I have for all of the people who advocate for doing away with prevailing wage and doing away with collective bargaining is how little are you willing to work for? Because that's where it's going to end. You know, how little can you survive on? And that's the main question I have for people. What wage do you need to exist? Because that's what's going to happen.
Well, you know, I'll tell you right now. I mean, you know, I totaled it up last year at 18,000. So if you think you can live on it, you're more than welcome to try, you know. And just by the grace of God that I have a situation where I've got a roof over my head. If I didn't have the situation I've got, I wouldn't have a roof. I'd be out on the street because I can't afford to hardly even rent anything for that kind of money.
That's horrible.
The thing that I'm going to say is with all of the states that have the right to work laws and with all of the states that have no way to recall politicians, it seems to me the best course of action besides the ongoing fight that's going right now, you know, I think we need to all the way across the board, we need to get some sort of a way to, you know, put this stuff on the ballot and get these abilities to where we can recall officials in every state and, you know, we can do ballot initiatives to stop this kind of action from taking place in the first place.
Well, it's a discussion worth having. The more I look at it, the more, you know, maybe you might be right.
Well, I mean, California did it, you know, and I don't know. See, right now, just thinking about it, I don't know if I can do that in this state either. I don't know if you can put anything on the ballot in this state.
I don't think South Carolina was one of the recall states.
I'm not sure.
I think
I'm really not sure. But to tell you the truth, they're so blood red in this state. You know, Democrats here, it's like, why bother? Because there's just, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, there's no real organization here, and it just seems futile. I mean, Republicans have had control for 21 years here. So it's, you know, it's kind of hopeless. Really, the only solution for this state and for me would be get the hell out of here. But beyond that, just remember something, you know, if you want to see what right to work does, if you want to see what it's like, all you got to do is go to the internet and take a good look at it. And, unfortunately, the Southern man, he just, for some reason, he doesn't mind beanie weenies and his kids running barefoot and no health care and whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how the majority of them live here. And I hope you guys can fight it off.
Yeah,
because
well,
if you don't, you know, and that's the other thing, too. I'll leave you with this question. What the hell is wrong with the working man that he doesn't know enough to how to value the worth of his labor? You know?
And I've gone through this. I've gone through this a number of times, Ike. I do believe that working people in this country suffer from a form of Stockholm syndrome. I think they've been beaten down so long, been pushed around and fired and let go and all of that, that they're, you know, what's the mantra of this whole recession? Oh, I'm just lucky I got a job. That's the mantra of the whole recession.
Normal.
Yep.
You know, and to have Susie Orman to come out and say, "Oh, guess what? Now you're not going to have as much as you used to have." Wow, there's a real newsflash. We've been knowing that ever since Reagan fired the PATCO.
Yep, absolutely.
But I don't know, man. Hang in there. No, I'm not going to give up, but, it sure does look dark right now.
Yeah, well, hey, this is when things turn around, when people start coming together, when people wake up. And I think it's going to happen. Ike, I appreciate the call, brother.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks so have much. A good one.
You too. At the end of this, it's, you know, you look at the right to work states, and all we kept hearing when we were at the meeting that they had, the press conferences, oh, it's going to create jobs. There are going to be jobs galore. Who has the highest unemployment rates right now? North and South Carolina, pretty high rates, both right to work states. Florida's got a high unemployment rate, right to work state. So this idea that somehow, ooh, we're going to create a bunch of jobs if we turn to a right-to-work state, ain't happening. The premise that they came out is, oh, we can steal those jobs from Ohio and New York and West Virginia. We can steal all those jobs from them. That's a good idea. Good economic development plan there, T-Twizzlers. Let's take a quick break right back after this.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We hate Pennsylvania Highway!
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Let's go to the neighborhood and
Yes, it will be fun with fancy doilies and fancy cookies and our little finger up in the air. Oh, very nice. With the news that Glenn Beck is leaving Fox, I'm still not sure how this is happening. I'm personally saying his ratings are in the toilet and they're kicking him to the curb, just trying to make it sound nice. Anyway, the Borowitz report has an idea. It says landing on his feet just hours after his program was dropped by Fox News Channel, controversial host Glenn Beck announced today that he had just inked a new contract to join the cable network Sci-Fi, formerly known as the Sci-Fi Channel. Speaking at a press conference announcing the move, Mr. Beck told reporters, quote, "The best part of this deal is that I won't need to change my format at all." Mr. Beck said the program was a perfect fit for a schedule of programming packed with aliens, paranoid conspiracy theories, and alternative universes. But the TV host's enthusiasm was tempered somewhat by Sci-Fi spokesperson Tracy Klugen, who told reporters, quote, "We warned Glenn that if he was going to be a good fit for the Sci-Fi, he's going to have to tone his act down a little bit. Some of the stuff he did on Fox was a little too out there for us." Mr. Beck said his new deal would run until 2012 or until the end of the world, whichever came sooner, and that he would be paid in gold bullion and ammo. Meanwhile, Congress reassured the American people that during a government shutdown, essential services would still be provided to Libya, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Very, very nice. I love the Borowitz report. But speaking about the wars, you look at where we're in, and again, I'm not in favor of being in Libya. I wasn't in favor of being in Iraq or Afghanistan. Part of me said you go after bin Laden. I was all in favor of that. Send somebody after him. Take him out. If we can't find one guy, a 6'5 Arab, you know, walking around in the desert with a dialysis machine, I don't know what good we are. I haven't found him yet either. But Al Franken yesterday introduced legislation, the Pay for War Resolution, that would require Congress to do something quite novel. Pay for their wars. Kind of novel, kind of a novel concept. You have a big project like a war, maybe you should pay for it. So in the future, he wants them to pay for the war, and he wants to make sure that the war doesn't add to the deficit and to the debt. The Pay for War Resolution also gives Congress a couple of options on how they might want to pay for it. No more whip out the credit card. They can either cut some spending, they can raise taxes, or they can do a little bit of both. He pointed to the $1.25 trillion that we've already spent in Iraq and Afghanistan and said, you know, the bill in the future, none of this stuff is going to add to our debt. That did. He was on the floor of the Senate where he said, quote, "We have to ensure that Iraq and Afghanistan remain anomalies in American history, and that's what my resolution seeks to do. It will ensure the future wars don't make our deficit or our debt problems worse. It will ensure that Congress and American citizens must face the financial sacrifice of going to war, and this is the big part, and it will force us to decide whether a war is worth that sacrifice," which is something we never talked about, getting into Afghanistan, getting into Iraq. We never talked about sacrifice. In fact, you know, the way they sold it, and you remember this, Jake, they sold it as, hey, this is going to be just like back in the 90s. It's got 91. It's going to be great. We're going to be in. We're going to be out. It's going to be quick, you know, because they're not much. Remember, it wasn't much. We were in. We were out. We're going to zip in, zip out, take what we want.
And have them pay for it.
Wasn't going to cost us anything.
Isn't that special?
Wasn't going to cost us anything.
They're
going to
welcome us with wine and roses.
Open arms, liberators. Didn't quite work out. And Franken said, in the last 10 years, our wars have been paid for by borrowing. The Iraq war was accompanied by a massive tax cut. That failed fiscal experiment created the impression that war requires no financial sacrifice. In fact, you remember what Bush said. You know, go out and go shopping. That's your patriotic duty. Go to the mall. Franken went on to say, we know it's just not true. The question is, who will bear the financial sacrifice? The generation that has decided to go to war, or its children and grandchildren? He said the bill was started months ago before the U.S. action in Libya. He said this didn't start with Libya, although it gives us a sense of urgency. And I agree. Look, at the end of this, I don't know what's going on in Libya. I don't know who our friends are. I know Gaddafi's our enemy, but I don't know what happens after him. So this is, I believe you get into a fight when you know what you want out of it. Sometimes you got to know how to get in, get out, and what you're going to get out of it. I don't know what we're getting in Libya. I really don't.
Well, maybe you and I a little bit. If it would have been George Bush, he would have went in there like an avenging angel. And we would have headed the attack. We would have paid all of it. I mean, Obama, to his credit, laid back a little, was a little more conservative in his approach, wanted to make sure he had all his bases covered. And he allowed the French and the English to kind of lead the charge a little bit, and there was nothing wrong with that. That's a tough situation, a very tough call. I understand what you're saying, Rick. We already have two wars. But on the other hand, would have it been right to allow probably thousands and maybe tens of thousands of people to be massacred? That's a tough call. I mean, it is a tough call. At some point, as humanitarians, and I believe in general, comparatively, this nation is very humanitarian, but that means sometimes you have to do things that are distasteful. I have to give, to some degree, the president kudos. He didn't bog us down for an interim period.
We don't know.
Well,
I
would bet that he is going to slowly back off here.
We have no idea.
And if I was a president, I would start pushing these Arab League nations, who were armed by us, by the way, and who have the wherewithal, and I'm hopeful that happens. So, but I don't think there's any way that this administration wants to get bogged down.
Well,
that would
want
be a
to.
Disaster.
I don't think they want to, but you have now put yourself in a position where it can only, I do believe it could only escalate.
But then if you really want to knock him out of the equation, Rick, then you got to put troops on the ground. And then...
Then so you're advocating for troops on the ground?
Then you, no.
Is that what you're advocating
I'm saying
for?
Is if you really want to make sure that he's eliminated, you probably have to put troops on the ground, and then you've crossed that line. Then you've crossed that line, and then what? Where do we go from there?
See, but as soon as you started down this path, you've led to that inevitable conclusion. Because you can't start this without taking him out. You can't do that. You can't...
Well, let me put it this way, Ray.
How do you decide who's the one we go after and who's the one we let go?
You are an honest broker because you have said you are opposed to all the wars. So you come from the moral high ground. What I don't like is these Republicans taking pot shots at the president, the same party who gave George Bush carte blanche, brought us into a war that we were basically lied to, and you see the unalterable mess we are in Iraq. That's where I have a problem. They ignore what George Bush did. They ignore his war. And now the president somehow is inept because he was restrained. I got a real hard time with that. There's a huge amount of hypocrisy. And a lot of people, and let's be honest, if we shouldn't do this, but if you're gauging this move by Obama on the political scoreboard, he probably did the right thing for his political career. Is that the way to go? That's up for question.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, this isn't going to end overnight. I'll tell you right now, and this is my prediction. We end up sending troops in there. We end up getting bogged down in there. This will be his undoing in 2020.
If that happens, I would agree with that. I think there's a very small chance that would happen. I don't think Congress would allow it to begin with.
Well, let's hope not. Because I think it was a bad idea from the beginning. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America. For the Rick Smith on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin working families rose to the challenge of their first big political ballot box test since Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights began in February. voters defeated a self-described conservative state Supreme Court justice. But as Jesse Russell reports, that razor-thin victory must still withstand a recount.
Tuesday saw historic spring elections in Wisconsin with both supporters and opponents of Governor Scott Walker on the edge of their seats, waiting for results from what should have been a mundane race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Going into the race after the primary election in February, incumbent Justice David Prosser was the hands-on favorite, having pulled in 55% of the vote over his second-highest leading opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, who only received 25% of the vote. After Walker introduced legislation that would limit collective bargaining rights for state workers, and Prosser indicated he supported Walker's efforts, the race became electrified. With all precincts reporting on Wednesday, Kloppenburg held a 204-vote lead. A recount is likely. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate said the results from Tuesday sent a signal to the state.
Clearly the results from yesterday's election represent a watershed moment for Wisconsin and a Waterloo for Scott Walker.
The energy from Tuesday's election is now expected to be passed on to 8 attempts to recall Senate Republicans who voted with Walker. Stephanie Taylor is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Big victories in target districts like Randy Hopper and Dan Kapanke. It looks like Joanne Kloppenburg took over 55% of the vote in Robert Cole's district and over 55% in Luther Olson's district. So this bodes very, very well for the recall campaigns against the Republican state senators.
America's labor movement says it's deeply disappointed that the Obama administration has signaled it will move in the near future to submit the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement to a vote in Congress. The AFL-CIO says the level of violence in Colombia is still unacceptable for trade unionists and human rights defenders. With the murders of union activists and oppressive conditions facing workers trying to organize there, the AFL says it remains strongly opposed to the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the Labor Federation appreciates the Obama administration's efforts to negotiate a separate action plan to try and address human and labor rights concerns, but that plan doesn't go far enough and doesn't guarantee an end to violence against workers trying to organize in Colombia. 51 trade unionists were murdered in Colombia last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, that's what we're talking about doing here in Pennsylvania. Start hocking things on the open market. Let's have that fire sale. Sell off the liquor stores. Sell off the schools. We need to close that budget deficit, even if we don't get anything for it. I look at what's going on in Washington, and again, you know, the Republicans are just giddy about the opportunity of reliving 95. At least that's the way I see it. This is remarkable how this has worked itself out. But let's get a perspective that may not be mine. I've asked Mike Konzel. He's a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, where he works on financial reform, structural unemployment, consumer access to financial services, and inequality. Mike, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this, and my feeling here is the Republicans want this shutdown. They want this pain and suffering that's going to come along with it.
Right. There's an interesting moment, I think it was yesterday or the day before, where Speaker Boehner went to his caucus and said, you know, we're looking at the polls and we're saying, you know, the Republicans are going to take a hit. You know, the Democrats, especially President Obama, might look better and maybe we should come to a deal. And as soon as he said that there might be a shutdown, his caucus started applauding. Like, this has been widely reported. There's no video of it, which is like shocking to think about, because this is actually going to be really destructive, and it's over such small amounts of what essentially the government does, but very crucial amounts for working people. It's really shocking to think of them applauding a government shutdown right now.
Now, it seems to me almost as if, again, I've been saying for the longest time, Republicans understand campaigning. They don't understand governing. So this is, to them, another campaign issue that they can use to campaign with, but it's really crummy governance.
Right, and it's one of those things. Back in 95 with Gingrich, you know, there's debate about this, but, you know, a lot of the Republicans really supported Gingrich. They think Gingrich nationalized a lot of local elections, and that's how they won. You know, right now, you know, the Tea Partiers, these brand new Republicans, are, you know, absurdly ideological. They're incredibly to the right on everything. You know, half of this fight's about Planned Parenthood and the EPA. And, you know, they don't really like Bonner. They don't really feel the need to work towards being good government people. So, you know, they're kind of irrational in a way, in the strict sense that it's very difficult to make a deal with them, because whatever you offer them, they just want something more.
Yeah, and I've been saying that. I mean, the whole time there was an agreement, and they moved the goalposts again. And this is a series of continually moving the goalposts.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, Obama offered $10 billion in cuts, which, let's remind your listeners, is crazy right now. Like, no actual economist thinks we should be cutting the budget right now. But, you know, Obama offered $10 billion in cuts. That, you know, they wanted 30. Obama eventually went to 30, or the Democrat leaders went to 30. And, you know, now they want 40. And now they're talking about doing 40. And they're talking about, you know, there's rumors that they might partially defund, you know, Planned Parenthood. Like, this is crazy the way, and it's really scary. For one more point, is that there's going to be another fight about the debt ceiling coming up in July. And if the Tea Partiers think that, you know, if they just act as harshly irrational as they want and they get what they want, you know, that's a really bad precedent to set for the next 2 years.
Yeah, and I think that this is, to them, and then some of the Tea Party people that I've had conversations with, this is the warm-up to that big fight of the debt ceiling, which I think Secretary Geithner was spot on. If we don't raise that down the road, it will be devastating for this economy, and it will be devastating for the country.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't describe your listeners enough, who may not be familiar with this, how devastating that would be for the country. I mean, it would, in a certain sense, necessitate also a government shutdown. I mean, the government couldn't pay for new things, so we'd have a government shutdown all over again. And, I mean, you know, that's where, you know, you would really, it would radically destroy the idea of a federal government in this country, which a lot of these people want to do.
Absolutely. And the thing is what I think most people, most sane, rational folks don't get is, if you're concerned about the debt, it would make that debt multiples worse, because the interest rates would skyrocket.
Immediately, yeah. Immediately the interest rates would go up. And even if they didn't skyrocket, even if they went up a little bit, like, you know, a tenth of a percent, that's a huge amount of money. And that's money that could be going to providing retirement securities, investing in this country, building roads, et cetera. Stuff, you know, the modern conservative movement in its kind of rawest form, where it is right now, shows no interest in.
So let me ask you this. You know, let's say tomorrow everything shuts down. We are, you know, we're kind of moving towards recovery. We're kind of coming out of the Bush recession. We're, you know, kind of getting back to where maybe we're going to be okay. What would a shutdown do to that recovery?
Yeah, remember the last recovery happened, you know, unemployment was maybe like 5.5%. Unemployment right now is 8.9, and functionally it's much higher because it reflects a lot of people who have dropped out of labor markets. It's maybe more like 10 or 11%. You know, right now, as you mentioned, we're kind of getting in a recovery mode. And one of the first things that would happen on the shutdown is that if you, for instance, were going to build a road for the government and you needed to check the status of a bid, no one will pick up the phone. No one's going to pick up the phone if the government's not shut down. So that means you might not be able to start work. So that means you may have to fire people, which means they're not going to go out and buy dinner. So, you know, they're going to, like, lay off other people down the road. It's really going to stress a lot of the business contracts that go along with government, the actual mechanisms of government, at a really crucial time for the recovery. And, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff, like, you know, the government doesn't shut down. So there's no there's not like they run fire drills here for this kind of thing. So no one really knows what's going to happen. Will hospitals be able to order new materials? Maybe not. But I mean, if they run out of bandages, what do they do? You know, there's a lot of really scary stuff we haven't thought through about this stuff. And there's a reason we don't think through this, because it's grossly irresponsible to get to this point.
Yeah, and again, I go back to the reality is the people who are perpetually running for office, the radical right who believe in campaigning all the time. This to them looks like a winning issue in 2012, because it's going to make the Democrats and the president look really bad, they think. I'm hoping that, I got to be honest, I'm hoping that people see through this.
I think what's likely to happen the day after is that a shutdown begins is that the Republicans are going to immediately start speaking with a lot of different voices, and a lot of moderate Republicans who understand how bad this is are going to be very nervous. Where the Democrats could, in theory, if he shows good leadership on this issue, which I'm not going to concede that, or I'm not going to take for given, Democrats will rally around President Obama. There's no real rally point for congressional House members, especially not Speaker Boehner. So in that sense, it's an opportunity for the Democrats to really get their act together. We'll see if they take advantage of it.
Have you heard anything new? What I'm hearing, there was a meeting this evening. Anything new coming out of that? I know Boehner said that there was no room between him and the Tea Party, that he was basically a Tea Party guy. I'm curious if there's anything coming that you've heard.
Boehner's a real backroom politician. I mean, I think a friend said, whenever he goes to a room, cigar smoke just shows up. He's like that kind of backroom politician. So
that's a good one.
He is not an ideological person in that sense. So that's why he has to keep convincing people of this thing. There's two separate issues. One is the budget cut. You know, they're fighting between 30 and 40 billion. The overall budget's like 1.5 trillion. And they're actually dealing with this very small sliver that goes to like basic essential things that keep the government running. They're cutting funding for like the Special Olympics. Like the Special Olympics are not bankrupting this country. It's the military, it's healthcare costs, it's pharmaceuticals. So we know what the problem is.
Right.
The second issue, so there's a budget issue. The second issue is that the Tea Partiers all added these riders to the budget. And you're going to hear about this a lot very quickly. There's a bunch of writers, all these ideological claims, like we know we can't have NASA work with China, we can't fund the CFPB, we can't do a bunch of stuff. The two main ones is one defunds Planned Parenthood. The second one kind of really goes after the EPA, prevents the EPA from doing anything with carbon emission. There's a third one that also basically defunds healthcare reform. As far as I understand, they have not started negotiating on these riders. With the assumption, I think, from Boehner and the insider people's point of view, is that they're kind of symbolic acts, and that's really about the numbers. We're going to find out if that's true, because they may be able to get to a number solution and not actually deal with, you know, Planned Parenthood and the EPA and the health care reform, and find out that's a real big point for some issues, and they can't get them to vote.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Mike Konzel. He's a fellow with the Roosevelt Institute. RooseveltInstitute.org is the website. You know, what I've been saying all along, and one of the things that I've been preaching is I don't think we have that great of a spending problem. I think we could do something with our military budget. I think we could rein in healthcare costs. My view is I think we have a massive revenue problem. And if you just go back, 25, 50 years, you look at the revenue that came in, I think, and you can help me if I'm wrong here, that we have this revenue problem.
You know, if we just let the Bush tax cuts expire, and then we go through with Obama's health care reform and tighten it up a little bit, we'd probably take care of most of the medium-term budget. I mean, those are the big things. You know, there's a little bit of things that we can do with Social Security, raise the payroll tax a little bit. But, I mean, in practice, the government is an insured. I kind of hate when Republicans and Democrats too talk about the discretionary spending and how we have to cut from there, because that's like a distraction. The government's an insurance mechanism for the old, the sick, and the people who are out of work.
Right.
It's the military, and it's a bunch of other things. And you can keep going after the bunch of other things stuff, but at the end of the day, that's not really worth that.
Yeah, but at the end of this, again, what's frustrated me is we haven't heard Democrats coming on to this idea that we have a revenue problem. If you go back and you look at the lame duck session after the November elections, the money that we gave away to the top 2%, some $69.5 billion, would have given the Republicans their $61 billion in cuts. I think that's a good place to start.
Isn't it shocking that we're having this talk about how we have to do things like defund Planned Parenthood and the Special Olympics right after saying we needed to give the top 1%, the top 3%, the huge extension of these Bush tax cuts that, did nothing to help the economy? I mean, it's really shocking to think about it in that way. And yeah, we definitely have a revenue problem. We have a giant loophole problem, which I think everyone's starting to really see as, all these corporations are starting to make a ton of money again and they're not paying any taxes. The financial industry could probably use a tax or two to kind of calm it down a little bit. There's ways to target that. And in general, I mean, even if you just go back to the Clinton years, which were pretty good years for the economy compared to, the last 10 years,
yep.
We would take care of most of these problems.
You know, here's my problem with this. And you go back, you talked about Planned Parenthood and all of that. Talking about defunding that, fine. We can have that discussion. What we're talking about in all of the states, in almost every state you look at, they're talking about slashing education by billions of dollars. Here in this state, here in Pennsylvania, $1 billion from K through 12, cutting 56% of the higher education budget. To me, not only is it narrow-minded and short-sighted, it's dangerous for our future, and it's going to harm us for years to come to do what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, like our public education system, our public colleges, I mean, our public universities are, you know, people come from all over the world to try to get in them. They're so amazing. And what we're trying to do is essentially privatize them. We're trying to sell them off to corporations. We're trying to sell them off to private bidders.
Auction them off.
You know, we're going to see auctioning off of everything. Roads, you know, they're waiting to be, you know, they're going to put pressure on these states, and they're suddenly going to say, you know, they're going to basically not collect revenue, and then they're going to say, well, we have this crisis, we have to sell all this stuff. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's really shocking. The it's not just public workers. It's like the whole idea of a public, like the idea that we have schools, the idea that we have hospitals that are, you know, for the people. Like it's such a broad based assault. And the states are far more ideological on the right. Like these new conservative governors, these new conservative assemblymen usually just thought of themselves as like random people, but they become so, the Tea Party is so mobilized them to go to the extreme right, and liberals don't have the infrastructure in place to attack it.
Yep.
We're starting to get it in Wisconsin, but we don't have it in place ready.
Well, I sure hope it comes soon. I hope it finds its way here to Pennsylvania, because we've got some real nut jobs here. You know, that corporate tool, Daryl Metcalf. Last question I've got for you. Any prediction? Where do you see this going? Is there going to be a deal tonight, or do you think this is headed, like I do, full steam for a shutdown?
I would put my money on a shutdown if I put money on things.
How long?
I keep hearing rumors that they're going to, the Obama team is going to do something with around 38 to 40. I fear for a government shutdown. I know a lot of people in a lot of places that would be hurt, but I kind of worry that if there's a cave and the Tea Party sees itself as victorious here, it's going to set us up for a much worse battle down the road. I mean, we kind of just have to have this fight. And, you know, it's like in The Godfather, you know, you just got to hit the mattress stairs. It's good once in a while to let the blood out.
Yep.
Because if it doesn't happen, if Obama is seen as very weak, the Tea Party is just going to get the taste of blood, and they're just going to go all out next round.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mike Konzel, from the Roosevelt Institute. RooseveltInstitute.org is the website. I appreciate your time. Would love to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Executive Director of CAIU on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, download it there at therickssmithshow.com. Our podcasts are there for your convenience, your entertainment, you know, your enjoyment. If you want to email me, Rick at therickssmithshow.com. Have you been following this thing in Wisconsin? Evidently, the governor of Wisconsin hired the son of some big lobbyist to become one of his, you know, one of his bigwigs. They moved him up to the Department of Commerce, where he was going to be in charge of like be in charge of 76 people. He was going to be in charge of overseeing like storage underground storage tanks and all of this stuff. And they gave him the job over someone who had, you know, extensive experience, advanced degrees, engineering degrees, had all of this pedigree, all of these credentials. But they gave it to this kid of a lobbyist, 27-year-old college dropout with a whole bunch of, DUIs and a whole bunch of problems. So then, you know, there was a big pushback as we were talking about it and everybody else has been talking about it. So Walker says, you know what, maybe I was wrong. Maybe we should have, you know, hired the other guy. So they demoted this Brian DeShane back down to the position in regulation and licensing where he had been making almost $65,000 a year, down from the almost $82,000 a year job that this big promotion he was given. Now he's resigned over the demotion there. So, good for him and good for the state of Wisconsin because, you know, at the end of this, having someone like this in a position like that really harms the state, I think. This kind of cronyism is bad. What we need in state government are people who are qualified. What we need, you know, where's that whole meritocracy thing the right loves to throw up? You know, we need qualified people to do the job, but yet when you see a story like this, Jake, where you obviously have somebody who is nowhere near qualified, he is about as qualified to run that department as Michael Brown was to run FEMA. And he had no experience. He ran horses or he walked horses around in a circle or something. Or better yet, the woman who was Sarah Palin's agriculture secretary in Alaska, who on her resume, on her document said, as a kid, I liked horses. That's her experience. She liked horses as a kid.
It's a little bit like I can see Russia from my backyard.
Yeah. Don't you know?
Don't you know?
No, I mean it's kind of funny that you know these Republicans who love to say that we need oversight, we need sunshine, and we need accountability, we need qualified people, and look what they do. And you've got the ideologues who are marching along, going, "We're Republicans because we believe in oversight, we believe in all of this stuff." Yet down the line, what do? They break those promises over and over and over again. Like yesterday, we talked about the thresholds here in the state of Pennsylvania. Republicans are trying to ram through these threshold bills that are going to allow localities and local school districts and stuff to bid out contracts. Oh, I'm sorry, to be able to have work done up to $25,000 without bidding them, without putting them in the newspaper or having any bid process whatsoever because they say it's too expensive. What's too expensive are no-bid contracts. Remember who brought us the no-bid contract? The Bush administration? Mm-hmm. That whole thing, well, we need to get those contracts out quick, so we're going to give them to our friends, you know, like Halliburton, so we can give them the sweetheart deals.
You mean like the contract they got for supplying meals to the troops over there and doing the laundry?
Yep.
They're so technologically advanced that they were the only corporation that could possibly do it,
right. And which is why we had to give them whatever they wanted. In fact, we were giving out cost-plus contracts. Whatever it costs you, do whatever you need to do, whatever the cost is, plus whatever profit you need. That was another advent of the Bush administration. You got to love that. Wow. But here in the state, this is what they want. They want to do away with the bidding process. They want to do away with that oversight, that accountability, that sunshine that the bidding process provides. They want to do away with that. For anything under $25,000, which I got to tell you, are a lot of the contracts. You know, people say, well, $25,000 today is nothing. No, $25,000 today is a lot of money. and it's a way to keep a brother-in-law or two employed for some school board member or some superintendent. Understand that. We are going back to the days of cronyism. They are taking us backwards, back to the days of backroom deals. All the while, though, telling us, oh, we need accountability. We need to be a meritocracy. I guess if you look at meritocracy as who you married, my brother-in-law needs a job, that's something worth of merit, don't you think? He was smart enough to marry my sister, so he deserves it. That's what they're telling us. Mm-hmm. Or he was smart enough to be my friend. So here, you're smart enough to be my friend. Here's some government money.
Well, as our guest said last night, was it last night or the night before, the man we had on prevailing wage, they want to do the same thing there. They want to reduce it to a lower level, and you would think, well, so who cares? Well, the problem is when you allow that, a good many of those contracts are under the amount that they want to set. In other words, it's a way around prevailing wage.
That's amazing stuff. And one of the suggestions that came out last night is, you know what you do? Since we have the internet now, put all those bids up on the internet. Let everybody bid on them. You know what? Let Joe, the unlicensed plumber, if he can come up with a license, bid on a plumbing job. Everybody, as long as they're qualified, should be able to bid on whatever. Why put it in the newspaper and maybe somebody's going to miss it? Put up a website, make sure it's there for a period of time, go from there. Problem is, there are states that want to do that, like the state of Florida, for instance. But they're saying, and, there are people in Florida, i.e. the newspaper people, who are complaining that, well, the state of Florida, they're constitutionally bound to conduct their business in the open. And in the open is in newspapers where they have to pay a lot of money, which I find pretty funny as well. But again, this is going to be a loss of revenue, but I think it's going to save taxpayers money. And if you really want to save taxpayers some bucks, I think the online idea is a great idea. It doesn't take you much to run a website, but it does take cost. It's going to cost the papers a whole boatload of money because they really gouge for that stuff. But do not allow them to take the bidding process away. And I think they're going to ram it through. The Republicans are going to ram these threshold limits through. They're going to raise them from like 4,000 up to 25,000. So again, you, the taxpayer, you're going to lose. My Republican friends, understand that the people who brought you the message of oversight and accountability, they are taking it away from you. They're taking it away from you. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Lori Wallach from Public Citizen, we're going to talk about this Columbia thing that just got me just flipping mad. I mean, look, I voted for the president. I want him to succeed. But on this, bring me some tea twizzlers because we've got some work to do. We're right back with Lori Wallach.
Good news, people. America's wages are up. The average worker is making more today than a year ago. How much more, you ask? Get ready to be excited. 58 cents a week. Of course, averages don't tell the whole story. Economist John Kenneth Galbraith graphically explained the problem of averages with a story about a 6-foot-tall man who drowned when wading across a stream with an average depth of 3 feet. Similarly, while average workers are trying to decide how to spend those extra 5 dimes, a nickel, and 3 pennies they're getting each week, your average CEO is wallowing in an extra $860,000 this year over last. That's just the increase in their bonuses. It does not include their multimillion-dollar salaries, which are also up, nor their golden pensions, free health care, limousines, corporate jets, etc. And, as you might imagine, many corporate chieftains did much better than average in their bonus checks. Take Robert Iger of Walt Disney, Inc. He pocketed a bonus of $13.5 million this year, 45% more than he got a year ago. Well, explained his PR agent, Bonuses provide incentives for excellent executive performance. And Iger deserves his riches this year because Disney's profits are up by 24%. Swell, but why is his increase double that increase in profits? And by the way, Robert's salary is $2 million a year. Why does he need any extra incentive to do his job? One more question. Does Iger really think that he alone produced Disney's rise in profits? Notice that the animators, performers, and other hard-working employees at Disney World and Disney Studios got no 45% increase in their pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, no one goes to Disney World to see Robert Iger. If he wants bonus money, tell him to put on a Mickey Mouse costume in the wilting heat of Florida summer and earn it. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. So today, President Obama met with the President of Colombia to talk about the Grand Action Plan. Again, I'm more of a fan of, why don't you do something to clean it up first, and then we'll evaluate it, instead of writing a bunch of things on a piece of paper and saying, oh, we'll do this in the future. I'm a big fan of having proof first. But to me, this is, again, as I talked about last night, I sat 20 feet from the president a couple of years ago at the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO convention, where he said, trust me, I am not going to sign a trade agreement that doesn't have strong labor rights in it and human rights in it, and I'm not seeing it. That's why I've asked Lori Wallach. She's the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Citizen.org is their website. Come talk to us a bit about this. Lori, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure.
Give me your impressions. You've been following these trade deals for years. You're the expert here. What's your impression of this?
Well, I think it's equal parts damaging, heartbreaking, infuriating, disgusting. The document that they released, the so-called action plan, is transparently just an attempt to move forward another of those Bush leftover NAFTA agreements, this one with Colombia. It doesn't address the horrific labor rights and human rights problems in Colombia. It begs the question, would we do this kind of trade agreement with Burma, with the Sudan? This is the same kind of conditions that are happening in this country. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, and you know, I looked at some of the stuff, you know, more inspectors, more labor inspectors, enforcement of labor laws. And my first thought, to be honest, was maybe we could start doing those things here first as well. While we're agreeing with that they're going to start doing it, maybe we could do some of that here as well.
Well, the situation with Colombia is such that, and a lot of people just came and wrapped their heads around it, as upset as we were with the attack on labor rights in Wisconsin. In Colombia, if you're a labor activist, not just a leader, but someone who just tries to organize your fellow workers, or you talk up the rights you should have as a worker,
Or wear a pin,
you have a high chance of literally being assassinated, if not threatened, if not beaten up, if not having your house burned down. And to put this in perspective, Rick, when the whole world's annual number of murders for unionists just trying to exercise their rights are added up, the whole world, China, everyone, it doesn't come close to just the year's death rate of unionists in Colombia. When this deal got signed in 2007, there were 37 labor unionists assassinated for union rights. These were not people who got into a burglary. These are folks who were investigated. Their story was investigated. They were killed for exercising their rights. When Congress and the public were watching Colombia most closely, because this agreement was very controversial, under the spotlight, what's happened? The number's gone up every year. So last year it was 51. This year already there have been 12 people. Last week there were two more. That's who we're making a deal with.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Trumka was, President Trumka of the AFL-CIO was right. If there were 51 CEOs killed, maybe we'd take a little different look at it.
To me, it's just shocking, actually.
Here's where I've taken this. And there's this whole push that I see in this country of people saying that we need to be more business friendly. And I've kind of looked at this as, much like when Reagan fired the Patco workers, the shot heard across the boardroom. To me, this is one another one of those moments where our president has said, we're business friendly. Here's the shot being heard across the boardroom. Because, you know, what could be more business friendly than taking a trade unionist up in an airplane and throwing him out?
To me, for whatever business friendly failed strategy the administration is considering, this is of a totally different scale of a country that we would decide to give the credibility of by associating ourselves so closely, where it's not just, by the way, the union assassination. Afro-Colombians comprise almost a third of the population, African descendants were Colombians. And they fought very hard in a very tough civil rights movement and got changes to their constitution and a lot of recognized rights. And the response has been by the military, by the paramilitaries, to forcibly displace literally hundreds of thousands of people off of their land. People come in the night, kill a couple of the leaders, stick their head in a pole, tell everyone else if you're not gone in the morning, you're next. Raise the land, take over, do whatever they want with it, mine it, put up palm plantations. There are, in Colombia, a huge number of people who have been murdered, forcibly displaced, who are indigenous people, who are Afro-Colombians. Systemically, this is a place that has enormous problems. And their zeal, the elite in Colombia's zeal for this trade agreement, could have been leveraged to try and actually change what are horrific conditions. Instead, the Obama administration is pushing forward to try and shove this agreement through the Republican Congress. Because when Congress was Democratic, Bush couldn't pass it. It's been sitting around for 4 years.
Let me ask you this. You know, the Tea Party ran on jobs. This, to me, you know, for all the talk of that it's going to create jobs, I'm not seeing how.
Well, the thing that's really actually horrific is the Colombia agreement is about killing the leverage for basic human rights. The Korea Free Trade Agreement, another NAFTA-style agreement that, heartbreakingly, the Obama administration has taken on. It was another of these Bush lopsided job-killing agreements. That one is the huge job killer. That agreement, even the government studies project, is going to increase our trade deficit. This is the same set of studies that they do in every agreement. And with NAFTA, we know how that worked out. They said it would create a surplus. So when that study that they do the same for every agreement says there's going to be a deficit, we're going to get our butts kicked. Hundreds of thousands of jobs lost. And the Tea Party guys missing in action. Missing in action.
Yeah, that's what I've been calling for. Where are my Tea Twizzlers? And you know, Venezuela, South Korea, Colombia, Panama's not far behind.
Basically, what we have here is the potential for a set of agreements that will do as much economic damage as NAFTA did, that will put our country in the wrong place in the eyes of the world, associating ourselves with a government that is implicated in killing its own people for exercising their basic rights. And the only thing that's going to stop that is us, because in the end, Congress has the say. So in your listening area, Congressman Holden, he's doing great. He's against it. He's helping stop it. The Congressman Schuster and Congressman Platt have been totally silent. No one knows where they are. In the past, they've both supported all of these job-killing agreements. And what we've seen happen is people across the country have been calling their members of Congress, insisting that they stick to their commitments and stop these NAFTA job-killing agreements. And one by one, happily, members of Congress are coming out against this whole dreadful trade package. That is what we can do to stop it. We can do it, but it's going to take work.
Yep. I'm right there with you. I'm calling my congressman. Let me ask you this, Lori Wallach. You know, the argument in favor of the Colombian agreement is that Colombia has been our friend because they're evidently the enemy of Venezuela. So we're rewarding them for standing up to Venezuela, if I'm getting this right.
It's convoluted, and I could see why you'd wonder if you had it right, because it makes no sense. But that has been the argument. That was the argument, for instance, President Bush put forward. Now, here's the thing about that. If you think about what theoretically we're trying to do, you buy their argument. We're trying to build support against what they call populism, against displacement and chaos in a country that will turn them against America. But the Colombian government, their own agriculture ministry, says if this agreement goes into place, it will displace, destroy the livelihoods of perhaps 20% of the rural population, which is the vast majority. The Colombian Agriculture Ministry, in its official report, said if the agreement goes through, you will have rural populations with only three choices. Join informal armed groups, the paramilitaries, get into drug cultivation, or migrate to the U.S. How somehow causing that kind of disaster to people's lives is going to help people like our country is obviously ridiculous.
Well, it sounds great to me. I mean, from the business friendly perspective, we could have more of these desperate people to go and clear out land so big businesses like Chiquita and Dole and those people can get property. We got all the cocaine we could possibly want, and we cheap labor coming here to the U.S. That to me sounds like a great deal. Sign me up.
You are as cynical as I am getting watching this. But, again, we can avoid all of this if we make our members of Congress actually represent us and not those crap few who might think this is a good idea. Your company, of course, excluded, because I know you're a teaser.
I'm against this. I was against it when Bush did it. I'm against it now. Last night I spent the entire night just... And look, I'm a supporter of the president. Most of the time I think he's got his heart in the right place. I just think his head's stuck somewhere else on this. And I cannot imagine what the labor leaders who he laid this out to were thinking and wanting to say before they left the White House.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I would say the way to describe this is Obama got the band back together. And unfortunately, it was that same band that was playing all the NAFTA music during Clinton. So the president does not specialize on trade issues, and he relies on a set of advisors who are literally the same folks who got us into NAFTA. So when it comes to this agreement, you have the president who, as a candidate, campaigned against it. You all remember the debate with McCain calling out the horrible labor conditions in Colombia. Since then, the murder rate went up. But somehow, here you have the president, who's against the Korea agreement, too, starting to push these agreements. And at this point, it's time for tough love, because the Democrats in Congress who support the president, the unions who support the president, are all unified in realizing we have to stop this agreement for his own good and for all of ours in the country. We have got to stop these agreements.
It's going to be interesting to see where the different factions end up on this, because, again, I've been calling out to my T-Twizzler friends to say, look, this is exactly the kind of stuff that I was with you on when you started. Because at the beginning, I could have been a Tea Partier. I really could have. I was angry. I was ticked off. My money from my 401k was gone. All of the things that I was told that was going to be the future, not happened. But then they took some bizarre right-wing, anti-government, pro-corporate agenda bought out by the Koch brothers, and it kind of just made me go, I think you guys are crazy, and I'm still angry. I still got a vision, but just not down this road. And trade was one of those things we agreed on.
Well, it's very interesting because the polling shows the opposition to more of these kinds of job-killing trade agreements is one of the only things that unifies our country across political parties, across regions. So the most recent polling, and some of these polls have been done every 6 months since NAFTA, show that majorities of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents are opposed, and amongst the strongest opponents are self-identified Tea Party conservative Republicans. So here's a really interesting question. Have those Tea Party Republicans, members of Congress, been captured by the inside the Beltway lobbyists, and they're no longer representing their actual constituents? And what can be done about that, obviously, for folks at home to get to their members, call them, harass them, get them to vote the way that they were elected.
That's exactly what I've been saying. I mean, they ran on this. We need to hold them accountable for this. Amazing stuff. Last question I've got for you. When do you see all this stuff coming? The president evidently has to go to Congress. They're going to lay this out some point in the near future. When's this going to start?
It's starting now. They're actually in the process of putting together the legislation. The good news is members of Congress are going to be home. Not next week, but the 2 weeks after that. So next week they're in D.C., and then the week after and the week after that they're home. That is a perfect time, and folks, it's so easy to just stop by your local congressional office. Their office hours, you look on their website, you stop by, give them a piece of your mind. And, you know, there are a lot of Pennsylvania members who campaigned against more of these agreements. And actually calling them up at home, calling them up at the Capitol, a phone number that I keep on my fridge with a yellow sticky is the Capitol switchboard. It's 202-225-3121. That's a good number to have for any issue you care about, 202-225-3121. If you're not exactly sure which congressional district you're in, just give them your zip code. And when you get to the member's office, then this fight's going to happen in the House of Representatives, not the Senate. You just ask for the staffer who's working on trade. And you ask them to give you a letter or an email back specifically explaining your constituents about whether they will join you in opposing these job-killing trade agreements. That is the way, actually, that people get their members to vote for them, not for the corporations. And you have to do it continually until you get the right answer. They keep score. I go into congressional offices all day. If you're calling from the district, they have a big score, plus, minus, and that really affects how they vote.
Yeah, and make sure if you want to write a letter, the letter is the best way to do it. Put it snail mail on actual paper, actual pen, with your signature at the bottom. That, I have been told, is the best way. I keep the Capitol switchboard number on my speed dial on my phone.
And always ask for a written response back, because that will let them know you are going to hold them accountable. If you, like, call up and they say, oh, he's with you. Who knows what the heck that means? You want it in writing clearly so you can have it. And if you go to our website, shortcut to our part of it's tradewatch.org, we're keeping score. So you can actually join thousands of other Americans who are actually calling their members of Congress and then writing in on the website, tradewatch.org. We're doing what's called a running whip list, a list of where all the members of Congress are, and we're having them whipped by the people they should be working for, everyone at home. It's actually kind of fun. We've got different congressional districts and states competing to see who can get the most calls, and it's working. Because the places where the most calls are coming in, those congressional delegations are coming out against these agreements.
And that's what we want to see. Again, tradewatch.org. We are going to put a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com so folks can get over there. Just click on Lori Wallach's name. Lori, always great to talk to you. Keep this fight up, and I'm sure we're going to talk to you again as this heats up.
I look forward to it, and folks who are listening, if you go to that tradewatch.org, if you feel nervous about what you want to say about the agreement, we have every piece of information you could want. You can even look for your congressional district at how many jobs are specifically at risk right in your district. That stuff is dynamite information to lobby with.
Lots of great information. Thanks so much, Lori. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your life. Come on, get up.
You know, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people standing up for their rights, getting active, getting involved, calling your congressman. Put the Capitol switchboard on your speed dial. Put your local representative on your phone. Make sure. I mean, I got a whole bunch of numbers on my phone that I keep there just in case, so that when things pop up, when issues pop up, it's just a phone call. Simple stuff. And this trade agreement. And again, I'm still flipping mad. You know. I'm not buying the whole, they're our friends because, you know, they're against, you know, they're the enemy of our enemy. I'm not buying that rationale. I'm not willing to give up on human rights and workers' rights. Just not willing to do it.
How many years have there been pressure on that government? And still, to this day, the prosecution rate is single digits, and it's worse than that, Rick. Some of those prosecutions are in absentia. So these people who certainly have clear connections to the powerful elite aren't being brought to justice. You have the government that has their militia. You have the drug cartel. You have the communist insurgents. And then you have the very wealthy with their own militia. It's a country at war with itself. Why on earth would we want a trade agreement with them? It makes no sense at all. And they haven't come. All of this is rhetoric. They really haven't improved the situation for the last 5 years, Rick. Not one iota. Yeah,
it doesn't make much sense to me. But, again, I guess it's a discussion we're going to have. It's a fight we're going to have to move forward on. Like a lot of stuff. I mean, this budget fight, this is another, the worker, you know, this agenda to steal workers' rights away all across the country. Look, this stuff is... This is what the radical right wants. They want a desperation class. They want agreements with places like Colombia, and they're using Obama. And again, I think, you know, there's part of me that believes that he thinks that he's doing the right thing by having this action plan. If we engage them, they'll change. I'm not buying into that. Look what happened in Mexico. Mexico has gone straight down since NAFTA. You know, all of our jobs left. All the jobs left. And has it made Mexico a richer country? For some, yes. They've got a couple of billion. They got one. I think they got the richest guy in the world, or at least one of the richest guys in the world, one of the top two or three, that Carlos Slim. He's got a lot of money, but the working people of that country, they're just as bad off as they were. Understand what happened. And Larry Wallach made an interesting point. In Colombia, the agricultural people, they're not thrilled. They're not happy. because we're going to do to them what we did to Mexico. We're going to flood their agricultural sector with our products and put those people out of work. And what is it going to do? We're seeing the we see what happens. All you got to do is look to Mexico. All those people were kicked off their land. They were pushed north to the maquiladoras to look for work. And a lot of them came here to look for work because there wasn't enough there. And now you're seeing these cartels. You're seeing these drug cartels who have taken on the rest of them. It's not a good scenario all the way around. But again, who benefited? Who won in all this? The multinational corporations. And you've got a party, the Republican Party, who, you know, for all intent and purposes, they're in the back pocket. They are absolutely in the back pocket of corporate America. I came across this clip over on Fox News, and it's one of these things that just grabs you when and goes, this is more Fox News. This is more of what they do. They've got a message, and they never stick to it. Facts be damned. Facts be damned. This guy named Eric Bolling, do you know who he is? B-O-L-L-I-N-G. He's a host of some Fox show. Well, he was interviewing Representative John Garmendi, a Democrat from California, who was saying, you know, we've got some problems. We're the wealthiest nation in the world, and you've got an oil industry that's making massive profit. And we're not taxing that. They're walking away from, and we're talking about cutting schools. We're talking about cutting all of this stuff to help people. And the oil company's getting away. Well, whatever his name is, Bolling, he comes to the defense of the big oil people. And listen to this. I mean, this is great.
Pays the most taxes in the world. You know who's paying the most taxes right now in America?
Well, we know
those,
it's not
those oil
Electric.
Companies that you're pointing the finger at, they're paying taxes on the profits. Their profit margins aren't high. And by the way, they're
that's
also
fine,
paying,
but
they're also paying
is,
royalties to be able to drill on the land. They're paying that to the government, too.
He says they're paying taxes on the billions of dollars profit. Yet we know, and we've been talking about this the last couple of nights, Jake, they're not paying taxes. In fact, ExxonMobil, who made $19 billion profit in 2009, paid zero in taxes. In fact, not only did they pay zero in taxes, we gave them money. We gave them money. And this idea that, you know, hey, well, you know, they're paying taxes by extracting stuff. Yeah, everywhere else except Pennsylvania, where the drillers don't have to pay tax. So this idea, again, going back to this idea that we need to cut when there's revenue out there to be had, the right-wing frame is, and, you know, they pay the most tax, even though the fact says that they don't pay any. So, again, you know, what you see on fake news over at Fox is fiction. I mean, it's made-up stuff. It's their frame, and they stick to it. Facts be damned.
And there's nobody on that network that's going to challenge them. That's just the way it is.
And what frustrates me, what just absolutely frustrates me, is we're hearing Democrats. I have yet to hear a Democrat come forward and say, you know what? There's some places where we could cut spending a little bit. Military budget, we could use a little cutting. Maybe we can get out of Afghanistan, maybe Iraq, not get involved in Libya. Maybe we could pull back some of our policing of the world. But understand why we're policing the world. We're policing the world to care for corporate America, those huge multinationals like GE who are paying no taxes. That's the reason we're where we are. Don't let them fool you into thinking, well, we're liberating those people. We care about those people. They don't care about the Iraqis. They didn't care about the Afghans. They don't care at all. They care about corporations. They care about the oil. They care about the money. And in turn, the big corporations give them donations. And lots of donations. It's only going to be when we wake up and say, you know, no more. And I go back and I suggest to people to read Smedley Butler's piece. And if you don't know who Major General Smedley Butler was, Google his name. Google War is a Racket. It's 16 pages, simple reading. But it basically lays this whole war for profit mentality out. And who succeeds and who loses. And you know, I'll give you the basic premise. The bottom line of it is the rich get richer and the poor, well, the poor, they get dead. Because the corporations, they win no matter who wins. Because they're selling to both sides. You look at Bush's grandfather, old Prescott, made his money the old-fashioned way. investing in the Nazis. You tell me, where's patriotism? We're right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin working families rose to the challenge of their first big political ballot box test since Governor Scott Walker's attack on collective bargaining rights began in February. Voters defeated a self-described conservative state Supreme Court justice. But as Jim Russell reports, that razor-thin victory must still withstand a recount.
Tuesday saw historic elections in Wisconsin with both supporters and opponents of Governor Scott Walker on the edge of their seats, waiting for results from what should have been a mundane race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Going into the race after the primary election in February, incumbent Justice David Prosser was the hands-on favorite, having pulled in 55% of the vote over his second-highest leading opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, who only received 25% of the vote. After Walker introduced legislation that would limit collective bargaining rights for state workers, and Prosser indicated he supported Walker's efforts, the race became electrified. With all precincts reporting on Wednesday, Kloppenburg held a 204-vote lead. A recount is likely. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate said the results from Tuesday sent a signal to the state.
Clearly the results from yesterday's election represent a watershed moment for Wisconsin and a Waterloo for Scott Walker.
The energy from Tuesday's election is now expected to be passed on to eight attempts to recall Senate Republicans who voted with Walker. Stephanie Taylor is with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Big victories in target districts like Randy Hopper and Dan Capanke. It looks like Joanne Kloppenburg took over 55% of the vote in Robert Cole's district and over 55% in Luther Olson's district. So this bodes very, very well for the recall campaigns against the Republican state senators.
America's labor movement says it's deeply disappointed that the Obama administration has signaled it will move in the near future to submit the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement to a vote in Congress. The AFL-CIO says the level of violence in Colombia is still unacceptable for trade unionists and human rights defenders. With the murders of union activists and oppressive conditions facing workers trying to organize there, the AFL says it remains strongly opposed to the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the Labor Federation appreciates the Obama administration's efforts to negotiate a separate action plan to try and address human and labor rights concerns, but that plan doesn't go far enough and doesn't guarantee an end to violence against workers trying to organize in Colombia. 51 trade unionists were murdered in Colombia last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, I got to tell you, I salute all of the people. When we were in Wisconsin, the week we spent there with all the people who spent weeks in the Capitol, they brought their sleeping bags, they laid on the marble floor, they did not leave. And this is, we went to Wisconsin for two reasons. One, to be part of history, and two, to come back with a game plan of what's going to have to happen here. You look at the fact that this governor, our governor, Tom Corporate, he wants to cut $1 billion from K-12 education. He wants to cut higher education by 56%. This is the kind of stuff where I'm hoping that when finals are over, all those college kids who are going to go home to no job say, you know what, we're going to take our sleeping bag and we're going to camp out here in Harrisburg at the Capitol. That's why, you know, when I saw in Washington State, in Olympia, Washington, that there were college kids and there were a bunch of people who had taken to their Capitol, I said, you know what, I need to talk to somebody from out there. That's why I've asked Griffin Buell. He's a student at Evergreen State University, actually from Pennsylvania himself, to come talk to us about what's going on out there in Washington. Griffin, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, totally.
Tell me, what's going on out there in Olympia?
Well, do you want the whole story, or do you want just the kind of play-by-play of what's going on right now?
Well, give me the baseline. Why are you there, and what's happened?
Well, we're here right now because the bottom line is that Washington State has the most regressive tax system in Washington in the United States, and we have some of the biggest corporations that the United States has, and we don't, and right now we're facing a $5.1 billion budget deficit, and without an income tax, it doesn't make any sense that these cuts are happening if there's still people making millions of dollars and sitting on plenty of wealth that could pay for these things. There's plenty of tax loopholes that could be closed, but there's been a slew of anti-democratic legislation that's been passed by the right wing in Washington State that's made it really difficult for those things to happen. So right now we're just kind of trying to get a real grassroots movement of people, students, workers, union members, unemployed, poor, whatever your identity is, that we need you here, and that it's important that people hear, and that these cuts are affecting everybody in there. Affecting a lot of people in really, really horrible ways.
What are some of the cuts that you're talking about?
Well, in terms of education, it's gone up 26% over the past 2 years, and it's going to go up. It's threatened to go up another 13% this year. Basic health, a health care plan for poor Washingtonians is on the chopping block as well. That's 66,000 people depend on that.
So basically, you're going through the same things we're going through here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they're talking about cutting. Exactly. This is nationwide. This isn't just Washington. This isn't just Wisconsin. This is Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, California. This is everywhere.
So what's the makeup of the Washington legislature? What are you looking at? What's your House, your Senate? What's the governor?
Well, we've got Democratic governor. We've got I'm not exactly sure what the exact split is in the House and Senate, but we've got a fair amount of progressive Democrats, but they're pretty health publicists right now at this point.
Well, the reason I'm asking is how much of this agenda could get pushed through if the Republicans wanted to, and what would the governor be able to do?
Well, the GOP just, from what I heard today, has put in their kind of right-wing plan, and I'm not 100% sure on what the right wing, on what the conservatives can do right now. Right now, our main organizing goal in Olympia has been to organize the kind of disillusioned and the apathetic, and because the people that are really being affected right now.
Yeah, the people who are going to suffer under this, you want to make them aware of what's going to happen, which is, like I said earlier, the reason we went to Wisconsin was to bring back the action plan. And it sounds to me like you guys in Washington have taken that action plan, because I think it has to be people who are going to go to their capital, which is their house, and sit down until their needs are met.
Yeah, that's kind of the goal right now. We've been having some troubles. It's been a hard organizing drive here. We didn't have that force, that swell of people, like we did, like we saw in Wisconsin, but we're definitely, out of my experience over the past few years, I've definitely seen a groundswell of anger, and more people are becoming involved and want to be seriously involved, seriously engaged with the process of, like, of the long haul of organizing a real grassroots movement against these cuts, because these cuts won't be fixed this year. They won't be fixed next year. I mean, unless we're really able to form a strong movement like we saw with the labor movement.
Right. So let me ask you this.
After the Great Depression. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. When you're looking at these cuts, how are they going to affect you personally? How does this whole plan affect you?
This whole plan affects me. I'm about to graduate. I've seen my tuition go up. I've seen friends not be able to come back to school. I've seen I know people that are unable to get their teeth fixed. I know people that because they're losing their basic health. It's affecting me in ways that it's not hitting me as personally right now because I'm lucky. My mom's a union member in Pittsburgh, and so I get health care through her, and I'm lucky to be getting out of school now while the tuition's still semi-affordable. But I know that these cuts are going to be they'll affect our entire country in horrible ways, and I know the reasons behind them aren't moral, and it's unjust, and that's why I'm really involved.
And this is what I've been telling the college age generation here. It's about you. It's about the people behind you. And when I spoke to a group here in Kutztown, I said, I need you to fight this for my kids because my kids, and I got three small children. Eventually, this is going to affect them. It's going to affect our family. It's going to affect every working class family in this country as we move forward, because what we're talking about are visionless cuts. There is no vision for the future. It's here and now that these radicals are looking forward to, and I worry about what the future is going to hold for my kids.
I worry about what the future is going to hold for myself, too. And that's a real way that these cuts are affecting me. I see them. If they continue, then, what does my future really look like? If I do want to have kids, will I be able to afford to go to college? And yeah, it's not just for me, and it's the seven generations in the future. What does it really look like?
Yeah, excellent point. So as you're moving forward, what are your hopes from your activism? What are you hoping is going to come out of this?
Well, right now I hope that we can win a fair budget for people of Washington State. I talked to a woman named Angela Fabro last night. She works with Washington CAN, Community Action Network, and she told me her story, and I hope that for people like her who can't afford health care, for people that for people that can't afford education, I hope that right now we can make it better for them, and in the future hopefully we can make it so, who knows, education is free and health care is free.
Yeah, this is something that I've been hearing an awful lot since I've been paying attention, that your generation, I think more than any of my lifetime, are the ones feeling the brunt of these insane cuts, of the insane policies that have put us in this mess, because when I was your age, I didn't worry about health care. I got it through my grandparents. And most of my friends got it that way. So this idea that you're not going to be able to get taken care of, you're not going to get your teeth fixed, to me is just a foreign concept that in the richest country in the nation, I'm sorry, no more tax cuts. We've got a revenue problem, not a spending problem.
I agree.
Last question I've got for you out there. Are you hearing anybody talking about the frame that we don't have a spending problem, that we have a revenue problem, and we need to be closing loopholes and raising taxes on those who are doing very, very well?
Everybody that I've been working closely with strongly supports closing tax loopholes and taxing the wealthiest Washingtonians and Americans. I've heard from a few Democrats that they're behind us and that they support us too, but, and that's all I hear is but, and it's hard to really get a grasp of what even the most progressive Democrats have been telling us right now. But I think that I know that on the most basic level, on the level that of the people that aren't involved in making decisions in the Capitol building and in the Senate and House and the Senate House, that people do support closing last loopholes. I think that the last poll I saw was that 70% of Washingtonians support closing these loopholes, and I think that that's proof.
That's where we go. Griffin Buell, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight out there. Good work, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Rick.
All right, Griffin, thank you so much. You know, I look at this, and I got to be honest, it's frustrating on a number of levels that we've, in the richest country in the world, Jake, the richest country in the history of civilization, that we have kids who have to worry about education, that we've got people who can't get their teeth fixed, we've got people who can't go to the doctor. It makes no sense to me.
Well, what is encouraging, Rick, and we saw this out in Wisconsin, at the end of the day, those who have the most to lose are those young people just starting out. And you see an awakening that hasn't been seen in this country since the 60s. Now, is it going to get stronger and stronger? It's going to have to get stronger because I think things are going to get worse before they get better. But it's encouraging to see that these young kids understand. And they're ready to engage in the fight, and that's encouraging.
I like that he stopped me. I was talking about my kid's future, which is, you know, down the road a bit. He's saying, well, what about mine now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's absolutely right.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Good news, people. America's wages are up. The average worker is making more today than a year ago. How much more, you ask? Get ready to be excited. 58 cents a week. Of course, averages don't tell the whole story. Economist John Kenneth Galbraith graphically explained the problem of averages with a story about a 6-foot-tall man who drowned when wading across a stream with an average depth of 3 feet. Similarly, while average workers are trying to decide how to spend those extra 5 dimes, a nickel, and 3 pennies they're getting each week, your average CEO is wallowing in an extra $860,000 this year over last. That's just the increase in their bonuses. It does not include their multimillion-dollar salaries, which also up, nor their golden pensions, free health care, limousines, corporate jets, etc. And, as you might imagine, many corporate chieftains did much better than average in their bonus checks. Take Robert Iger of Walt Disney, Inc. He pocketed a bonus of $13.5 million this year, 45% more than he got a year ago. Well, explained his PR agent, bonuses provide incentives for excellent executive performance, and Iger deserves his riches this year because Disney's profits are up by 24%. Swell, but why is his increase double that increase in profits? And by the way, Robert's salary is $2 million a year. Why does he need any extra incentive to do his job? One more question. Does Iger really think that he alone produced Disney's rise in profits? Notice that the animators, performers, and other hard-working employees at Disney World and Disney Studios got no 45% increase in their pay. This is Jim Hightower saying, no one goes to Disney World to see Robert Iger. If he wants bonus money, tell him to put on a Mickey Mouse costume in the wilting heat of Florida summer and earn it. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Interesting story coming out of New Hampshire. The House Majority Leader, a guy named Benton Court, he has come out and apologized for calling the Catholic bishop up there, John McCormick. He called him a pedophile pimp because, oh, gee, the bishop questioned the massive budget cuts that the good, compassionate conservative Republicans were throwing out. The bishop said, look, you know, these cuts could hurt some of the most needy citizens in our state. And for that, he was welcomed with pedophile pimp, which is what you would expect from a Republican. You know, you got to, hey, you know, you got to expect that. You got to expect that.
And Betancourt, the knothead, why would that surprise him if you would read the papal encyclical? Papal encyclical is clear about how the church should be treating poverty and the poor. I mean, it's clear. I guess in the republic world, anybody that opposes you is evil, I guess. That's the only logical conclusion I can make.
Well, at the end of it, he did apologize, not that it matters. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, and I've spent a lot of time in New Hampshire. I love, you know, when my wife and I ran away to get married when we were, I was 30 or something.
When you were young.
Actually, I was 33.
When you were young and quite a bit lighter, shall we say?
Actually, yeah, I was 33, 34 most. We ran up to New England, up to Vermont, to run away to get married because they had the least restrictive marriage license rule. But we went through Nashua, bought our wedding ring and dress and everything, all that, all the way up. And you know, I love New Hampshire; it's a beautiful state. But you know, I didn't realize how crazy it was. Evidently, half of the Republicans up there are birthers. Some of the polling that's come out, they've come out, this Quinnipiac poll has come out and said 42% of them are, and a public policy polling poll came out and said 49%. It's kind of weird. Also, they are big Donald Trump supporters because evidently the Donald is the birther king. So it's kind of interesting. You know, it's going to be this whole Republican primary, and we're trying to get our way up to New Hampshire because that's where the Republican primaries are going to kick off. We're going to try and go up there for the primary to bring you the insanity, and it should be interesting. It's going to be an experience because I've never been to New Hampshire during election time, so it'll be an interesting experience seeing what goes on up there. You know, wow. Is our country this divided? I mean, are we that easily led astray? Look, the reality is it is what it is. Obama's a citizen. Get over it. They've produced the documents. And yet none of these people, either you just made those up. In fact, what's interesting is when Trump came out with his birth certificate, it wasn't good enough. It didn't meet his requirements because it didn't have a seal. It didn't have a name, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. So
haven't we heard this for 5 years?
But it's all they can come up with.
And the Republican mantra has been, what is he hiding? What is he hiding? Here's the issue. Here's the issue. He could probably get J.C. to swear. Bring back J.C. in a seance and swear that
a seance.
And they would find another reason. They just want that out there. It's that simple. Now, if I can make a comment about the Don, in my perception is that he's, as far as finances, as far as money, he's probably the only one who can come close to Romney. Probably obviously he's worth more. But these other fringe candidates, if they lose a couple primaries, they'll probably be out. But the Don, he can stay in it for a long, long time.
He's got big money. Anyway, you remember the guy who was running for Senate in Virginia? He's the former governor of Virginia, former senator from Virginia, George Allen. Remember him? Got himself into a little trouble when he was, you know, running the last time for. You
is
know,
it George?
Yeah, George. Called.
Thought that
George,
was his father.
George Allen. Yeah. Well, this is, you know, this
Junior.
Is
okay.
Remember when he got himself into trouble for calling somebody macaca? Remember that, the whole macaca thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out he's now making some bizarre, weird references again at a press conference. You know, this tall black reporter wanted to ask him a question, and he said, you know, you played sports, or you can swing a bat, or assuming that because he's black, he played sports. And the guy's like, you know, I never did any of that. It's a pretty racist assumption, if you will. But, you know, hey, you know what
it is. Black bookworm, can you imagine?
It is. It is.
And here's the thing. I know that it'd be true. The Democrat isn't running in Virginia. So, you know, he would have a legitimate shot this time again, even though he screwed up.
Well, Tim Kaine's a horrible candidate, so we'll see how that works out itself. Also, a new poll out of Mississippi. And you go, well, could it get any worse than Makaka? Well, yes, absolutely. Mississippi, according to the poll, a full 46% of Mississippi Republicans say they believe interracial marriage should be illegal. 46%, according to the public policy polling people.
Mm-hmm.
Only 40% thought that it should remain legal, with the rest unsure. 14% were unsure.
I guess here's my question. What if you're 20%? What if you're considered white and you're 20% black? Does that, you know what I'm saying here? Is this,
look, here's
the, you gotta be pure? You gotta be pure?
Now you're muddy in the water. You're muddy in the water.
I'm asking you a logical question.
Well, the logical question is, if you're not 100% white, you're not white.
Uh-huh. Well, you better look. Some of these white people better look in their lineage. So I gotta say, we'll leave it at that.
Well, you got something in your background?
I don't think so, but there could have been.
Well, if you don't go to Mississippi.
Okay.
Kind of just weird though. I mean, you know, I thought we had moved past that. Evidently not in Mississippi. It's kind of a weird thing.
Is this kind of like Nazi Germany where you had to be 100%?
It's nuts. The poll also found that overall Mississippi Republicans want Haley Barbour as their nominee for the presidential 2012 run. Haley Barbour won 37% of the survey vote, compared to 19% for Huckleberry and 10% for the newt, the little lizard that he is. Romney, Palin, and the rest didn't fare quite so well. Probably because they're from them there northern states. You don't want that Romney guy. He's a Mormon. I don't want none of that.
Romney.
He comes up from that liberal state where that whole marriage thing came from. They're going to first let the Negroes marry the white people. Now they want the queers to marry. But that seems to be the Mississippi mentality. And speaking of gays, evidently archaeologists say they have uncovered something quite unique. In the Czech Republic, they have unearthed the remains of a human male from the Copper Age who was buried in a traditional way reserved for females. So they're saying that they have now unearthed the very first gay caveman. That should make the people of Mississippi lose their ever-loving freaking minds. Not my take, but that's...
I'll put that under who really cares.
Gay cavemen. What's wrong with gay cavemen?
I don't know. I don't care.
Also, a presidential campaigner, Tim Pawlenty, evidently one of his staffers in Iowa, decided to get drunk and try beating on some 15-year-old girl's back door at 3 o'clock in the morning. He was arrested. he was arrested, and of course what they did is they suspended him for a couple of weeks without pay, and he will have to, I'm sure, plead guilty to something with a slap on the wrist and a pat on the back. Because, you know, hey, any good Republican needs one of those drunken nights where you're knocking on the back door of a 15-year-old.
And, of course, when you were 15, you would have never dreamed of that.
You want to answer that? No, go ahead, answer it. No. We'll wait. Go ahead. We had to wait. We had to hear it ring. Go ahead.
Sorry, bud.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death, no one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website, ricksmithshow.com, now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. And thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
What's going on with this budget? I'm just mind blown.
It is totally mind blown, and it is clearly, I was just talking to our friend Bob Ney, former congressman. He said this is just, it's just a show and tell, and I think I may have said this to you yesterday. But basically, the Republicans now, they're trying to have meat to their party, so they're adding things like either getting rid of Planned Parenthood or stopping abortion in the District of Columbia. The only thing that they have complete control of is the District of Columbia, so why not try and stop abortions there? Then, you know, they're trying to take another $12 billion just to do a continuing resolution for a week, and as Harry Reid said earlier today, this is not about numbers. This is about ideology, yep. Basically, and that's all it is.
Well, it's, and the other part of it is I truly believe that no matter what the Democrats give them, they're going to keep moving the goalpost to get more and more and more because they really want to push this shutdown. They want 1995 back. They want a redo.
Well, they want 1995 back, and they want to push the fact that that they can feed their constituency, their base, so that they get reelected and say, hey, we managed to shut down. We pushed the Democrats. We got your social issues done.
Yeah, well, just like the last time, don't be surprised if it backfires on them. Because I
exactly.
do.
Exactly, and they're saying it's not going to. In fact, they issued, you know how I know, Rick, when the talking points are coming out from the Republicans. I do, as you know, many radio stations during the course of the day.
Right.
And when I have heard the same thing from two or three conservative stations, I absolutely know is on their talking points. And when I hear exactly the same words, it was, this time it's, well, the benefit is not going to be like 95, 96. It's going to be different this time because of the internet. And when I heard that several times, I knew that was just straight out of the Republican talking points.
Oh, the Republicans, they're not all in line with all of their conservative talk shows and all of their mainstream corporate-controlled media. They're not all on the same page, Ellen.
Of course not.
That's the liberal media that does that.
That's right. Can you imagine? What are they going to do without Glenn Beck?
Yeah, really. But I've been looking for this liberal media. I think the liberal media is in that welfare queen's car with Bin Laden and the small family farmer who lost the farm because of the estate tax. I think they're driving around somewhere. Maybe they'll find him. Maybe they won't.
Well, I don't even know if we're going to come out with a continuing resolution. By the way, I did a count. This would be the seventh continuing resolution.
Yeah, the White House has said it's going to veto it. If it comes to his desk, that's the threat they made.
Well, if it comes and it's not clean,
right.
And as I said, it's a ransom for the additional $12 billion. And as they also said, the Democrats said, they know it's dead in the Senate anyhow.
Right. Yesterday, big news for me yesterday. I was just flipping mad all day yesterday about Columbia. The fact that now our, you know, the president's going to come forth and push another bad trade deal, another, job fleeing trade bill. What are you hearing on this?
Well, the president, the two presidents met today. President Obama said that Colombia was one of our strategic partners. He said we are trying to translate into action and engage in good working conditions, he said, so that all workers are treated fairly. He said this is good for us, $1 billion of exports, thousands of jobs. Now, the Colombian president said that there was going to be a green light to go to Congress and that they are going to have a physical defense of workers. If you can figure out what that means, I'll give you $1 million. And also that this is a time for you to know about. They're going to go on a presentation to Congress on April 22nd.
Oh, I can't wait. To me, what this is this is that that move that shot heard across the boardroom, like Reagan firing the Patco workers. This is going to tell American CEOs that, you know what, America is business friendly, and business friendly like Colombia, where you can take trade unionists up in a plane, throw them out. That's business friendly.
Well, obviously, that's what I, when he said this physical defense of workers, what does that mean? Now, we're not going to throw them out of a plane. We're not going to arrest them. We're not going to shoot them. Is that all it means?
No, we're not going to throw them out of planes, but we'll let people pull them off of buses and shoot them in the head. That's what we'll do.
Right.
But just flipping that. And to be honest, this is going to be a test for the Tea Party because the Tea Twizzlers, they came out against a lot of this stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see where they fall on this.
And to see if they fall in line with their friends, the Republicans.
Yeah, this is going to be the moment, and this is going to be the true test. This is going to be the litmus test for them. I guess the Department of the Defense had something today?
The Department of Defense was pulled before Congress, and this was the issue of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Republicans say they want to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Of course, they also know that they have absolutely no chance to do it. It was before the House Armed Services Committee, and Democrats and actually people at the Pentagon say the issue is settled, it's done. But they have to provide their people with the red meat.
Right. That's something to get them all tingly in the panties about. April 15th. April 15th, just around the corner.
It is, and it's something other than tax day. Most people don't realize that it's also the day that the budget resolution is due. That's the broad outline of the budget for 2012, and as you know, the Republicans, through Paul Ryan, have their idea of what this resolution is going to look like. Democrats obviously don't agree. There were three different issues that were actually turned down by committee today, and this had to do with amendments. And it's very interesting. One thing you might want to take a look at is the Institute for Policy Studies, kind of a left-leaning group, said that they figured out a way of getting $4 trillion over the next 10 years out of the budget, including closing overseas tax loopholes and new brackets for households of people making $1 million or more per year.
Yeah, that's never going to fly with the Republicans. Because those are the people, as Stiglitz said, of for and by the top 1%. What's going on in Libya? The ground troops, possibly?
Well, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. However, Army Chief of Staff, they're saying there is a possibility that they may do it through NATO.
Oh, they better.
Again, the United States will probably try and stay in the background on that one. As somebody I know said, if there's Obama's a sure win unless he gets himself into a third war.
I'm right there with you on that. What are we looking at target-wise?
I just don't really know. I think what they're trying to do is arm these guys so that they have a fighting chance against the troops with Gaddafi.
My problem is,
do
we even know who our friends over there are? Or do we have friends?
Is whether we have them. That's a very good question. We probably have a pretty good idea who the rebels are, although they're a disparate group. Anybody who's anti-Gaddafi. But other than that, that's a CIA job, and I don't know enough.
Right. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And now to find out what's going on here locally, what do you got for us?
Yeah, a couple interesting articles. Corbett was asked by a myriad of organizations, Rick, to rescind his DEP policy on drilling violations. a group of about 42 organizations and concerned citizens send a letter on Thursday to Governor Tom Corbett asking him to rescind the recent Department of Environmental Protection edicts requiring prior approval by political appointees before any violations are filed against drillers in the Marcellus Shale. The letter says this: requiring all notices of violations to pass a bureaucratic gauntlet of DEP officials, ending with the acting secretary himself, will create unacceptable delays in resolving identified problems, putting public safety and natural resources unnecessarily at risk. It was signed by a variety of groups, including the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania Council of Churches, Pennsylvania Council of Trout Unlimited, National Wildlife Federation, Sierra Club, Conservation Voters of Pennsylvania, Audubon Pennsylvania, and Penn Future. DEP has explained the new policy as a three-month pilot project that attempts to establish uniformity of regulation through all regions of the state. The policy applies only to drilling in the Marcellus Shale. Thursday's letter to the governor says a series of accidents, spills, and groundwater contaminated incidents and reports by the media about weaknesses in Pennsylvania's regulatory framework and enforcement capabilities have created widespread public doubt that horizontal drilling and hydrofracking can be done safely. One of the primary ways that the Commonwealth can address those concerns is to adopt a zero-tolerance policy for violation of environmental protections at drilling operations. DEP must give inspectors the clear authority to take action to immediately identify problems and require drillers to correct problems as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the new DEP review and clearance policy undercuts inspectors' ability to do their jobs. Unfortunately, the administration that wanted to be a new type of administration, reform, to have policies that the public can trust, when you allow pretty much political appointees to make final decisions that affect the safety of the state, I think you're treading on some very, very slippery ground, and I'm glad to see a whole host of community and environmental groups speak out. We shall see if it has any effect in the future. Federal agencies share shutdown plans with employees as budget agreement talks turn sour. The Obama administration is telling federal agencies to give employees detailed information about contingency plans. The government shuts down. Jeffrey Zients of the Office of Management and Budget says administration officials held a conference call with agency heads this morning. He says officials instructed agencies to tell their employees which services will remain open and which employees will be furloughed. Midnight Friday is the deadline for lawmakers to reach an agreement to keep funding the government at full levels to avoid a partial shutdown. Zion says the impact of the economy of even a short shutdown could be relatively significant. House Republicans advanced legislation today to avoid a governmental shutdown for one more week, cutting spending and fully funding the Pentagon, but the White House labeled the measures distractions and said President Obama's veto would surely follow. Obama said in a statement he believes we need to put politics aside and work out our differences on the spending plan that covers the government through September when the budget year ends. Be very, very interesting, Rick, to see what comes out of that. I think the Republican Party is without question playing with fire on that. I think no matter what the Tea Party thinks, I think the public is not going to look kindly on any politician that forced a shutdown, especially if it goes more than a couple weeks and the people get a real taste of what it would be like to shut down the government. Some job figures, although the job figures have improved in the last couple months, according to a recent article, black unemployment has risen even as the jobless rates have dropped. When the recession began in 2007, black and Latino workers lost their jobs faster than whites, says Roderick Harrison, a demographer at Howard University and senior fellow at the Nonpartisan Joint Center for Political and Economic Research. That's because black and Latino workers were concentrated in industries that lost the most jobs, like manufacturing and construction. Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research says the employment-to-population ratio, otherwise known as EPOP, the share of the population that is employed edged up to 58.5%, the highest ratio since September. But for blacks, the EPOP fell to 51.9%, practically at the recession level in September. The lack of additional funding for the Economic Recovery Act aid to states also hurts the black middle class, according to Harrison, because many of them work as teachers, police, and in public service. Without that federal aid, he said, state budgets are strained and those jobs are in jeopardy. Finally, Harrison says the ability to get new jobs generally requires a car. The jobs that are being created are office jobs, and most are located in far-flung suburbs, not in the cities and inner-city suburbs where most blacks live. So some interesting information there.
As I said, they're not, you know, they're not on the bus line. You know, like when I was a kid. You know, it's just like when I was growing up in the projects. You're not on the bus line, you don't get to the job. Simple stuff.
That's
which
exactly
is why,
right.
You know, to be honest, you know, this is why you see such a pushback against public transportation. You know, especially from the center of the state. Well, you know, they understand in Philly and in Pittsburgh, you need to have public transportation. One of the big, you know, the underlying kind of wink, wink, nod, nod stuff is, well, if we have public transportation, I ran into this the other day where someone, you know, asked me why I support having a light rail going from Carlisle to Harrisburg. Because he said, don't you know those people will come here? And I'm going, exactly which people are you talking about? You mean me going to Harrisburg? I'd love to be able to jump on the train and come to the ballpark or go to work or do anything. I'll be having the ability to not have to jump in my car every time I need to go somewhere.
It's those people will come here. Well, and here's the lack of foresight. I mean, this is so much needed. Not only would it alleviate traffic jams, not only would it set the stage for even more expansion improving our light rail and improving our transportation system. I mean, it economically it would be a boon. I mean, it's that should be a no-brainer. And yet, what do we have? We have local officials with lack of vision. And, you know, here's where guys like Mike Fedor, who's a new kind of candidate, has some new ideas and saying, look, he's out there touting that light rail, which, by the way, the county commissioner should have done 5-6 years ago. And in the end of the day, they didn't have the kahunas to raise the revenue. Shame on them. And now we have what we have. You have to travel it every day, Rick.
Yep.
You know what 81 is, and that's a major, major road. And it goes from Canada all the way down to Louisiana, and already it's almost antiquated.
Yep.
I am the Tea Party people.
Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
Wants me to give my money to someone like you, but I can't believe it. What a crazy man you do.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
A new Institute for Policy Studies report is out called Unnecessary Austerity. It explains how Congress could raise more than $4 trillion in revenue over the next decade by reversing years of tax handouts to the very wealthy and the very big corporations. The report examines massive shifts in the tax code since 1961, the year Barack Obama was born. For example, if corporations and households amassing $1 million or more in income each year paid the same rate that they did back in 1961, the Treasury would collect an additional $716 billion a year, or $7 trillion over a decade. Now, this is, you know, basically what we've been talking about from the very beginning. It's nice to see other people picking up on this, the people over at the Institute for Policy Studies. The guy who directs that institute over there, a guy named Chuck Collins, said this potential shutdown is an unnecessary exercise. And I agree, it's completely unnecessary. We shouldn't be doing this because we're doing whatever we can do to hand money out to the very wealthy. I mean, go back to after the 2010 elections. They gave away this year $69.5 billion. The Republicans wanted $61 billion in cuts. I can do that. That was pretty simple. But they want to do it some other ways. They want to make it on your back. They want you to suffer. And look, you know, they're using the whole, well, the welfare queen, she's out there, and there's all these people pumping out babies. No, that's very small. In fact, the biggest amount of welfare that we give out are to corporations. So according to the Institute of Policy Studies here, what they're saying is maybe we should be closing some of those overseas tax havens instead of passing a Panamanian free trade agreement, which would make another tax haven. Maybe we should be closing those down. They're saying that would save annually somewhere around $90 to $100 billion a year. And if you jumped up that top tax rate, that millionaire tax rate, just a little bit, go back, you know, even to the Clinton years, you could raise annually somewhere between $60 and $80 billion a year. And they tack onto something that I've thought has been a very good idea for some time, this idea of a transaction tax on Wall Street. And we haven't talked about it much recently, but I used to talk about it a lot a year or so ago, because I thought this is something that we need to stop the speculation. So you have a 0.05% transfer tax. There are hundreds of millions of trades every single day. You need something that's going to slow that down a little bit. Make people, and you know, hold on to things a little bit longer. And I think it's a smart thing to do. And you know what? Maybe it'll stop some of the speculation, but maybe it'll balance our budget, Jake.
And the chances of getting it passed?
again, this has got to be a groundswell of support.
Well, look,
instead of saying we're going to cut education, instead of saying we're going to cut health care, instead of saying we're going to cut, we're going to slash and burn, destroy Medicare, destroy Social Security, destroy the safety net in this country, take away all advantage that someone might have to make it to the middle class, take away all that. Why not have a conversation on how we raise revenue to keep some of the things? And you know what? Even invest in the future. Like maybe, I don't know, build some roads. You got kids in Washington sleeping in their capital saying, please don't raise my tuition anymore. You got people here who are going to have to do the same thing, Jake.
This is my point. We got to start doing what the Republicans have done. Look at what they're doing today. We think it's crazy, but you know what? These ideas have been out there for years, and they got it out in the public, and they slowly persuaded more and more people, and they pushed the agenda. We got to start getting these ideas out. That's where it starts. Again, the Republicans, they just seem in many, many real ways, Rick, to outsmart the Democrats. I mean, they are dedicated, and they never give up. They never give up.
At the end, and this is something you have to give the Republican Party credit for. They don't mind getting into a fight, even if they lose.
Absolutely.
And the Democrats, for some odd reason, they don't want to take their coat off. I'm in favor of, look, sometimes you got to smack somebody in the mouth, even if it means you're going to take a real whipping.
Sometimes you have to lose 10 people to save 1,000. I think that's a pretty good analogy right now. You're gonna hurt some people if you leave the government go down, but at some point, let's say you don't shut the government down. Okay, what's going to happen next time? Are they going to ask for $100 million next time? Are they going to go after? You have people like Michelle Bachmann said, I don't care what they come up with. If it funds Obamacare, I can't support it. She's drawn a line in the sand, as crazy and as loony and as T-Twizzler as we think she is. In fact, I know she is. They mean it. They are not afraid to let the government go down. But the Democrats, they're, I don't know.
See,
at some point, they're going to have to draw a line to say.
Absolutely. And this is the reason that Democrats have such a problem, because I'm looking at our president, and I'm angry at him right now for these trade agreements. If he took a strong position, said no, and on anything, look, this is where Democrats have taken a beating. They don't look strong making the decisions they make. They've got to appeal to the barely high school aged, blue collar working class white male who gets drunk on Friday night and fights out in the parking lot. That's who you've got to go looking towards. And if that person can't look to a politician and say, that's somebody I'd want to have a beer with, you've lost. And it means sometimes you're going to get into scrapes and you're going to lose, but you know what? At least you fought the fight. Whatever happened to the mentality of fighting the good fight? This, to me, is a good fight. Standing up for education, standing up for health care, standing up for the things that progressives and liberals and Democrats should be standing for. Instead of saying, oh, we need to cut. We need to have more spending cuts. Oh, well, you know, we need to raise the retirement age. We need to do... No. Stand up and say, no, we don't have a massive spending problem. Could do a little things around the edges. We've got a revenue problem. And we're going to address that. We're not seeing any Democrats doing that, except for Jan Schakowsky and a number of people who, Bernie Sanders, and a number of people who have come out with, hey, you know what? There are people who are doing wildly well. The hedge fund managers we talked about yesterday, the top 25 of them making an average of $850 million a year. The year before, they made $1 billion a year. We're not broke, folks. When we got 25 people on Wall Street making $1 billion a year, we are not broke. And don't let them fool you into
absolutely
that.
Absolutely right. I think Obama makes a mistake sometimes of appealing to people on an intellectual level. Well, you know, a lot of people, they want that visceral. They want that emotional level. They want to be able to see that. We have a president that has guts, and he's willing to take the gloves off and duke it out. And you don't see that with him. And I understand that's part of his personality, but it's hurt the Democrats in the past. That's one of the huge mistakes the Democrats made since Obama's been in office. And on some issues, I still see him doing that.
We will see what happens tomorrow. I'm looking forward to seeing where this takes us, because tomorrow is the deadline. So when we come back tomorrow night, we will find out. We'll go from there. I'll talk a bunch about that and your calls. Also, if you want to email me, feel free to give me your thoughts, your opinions, comments, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, don't forget to check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. You can download our podcast. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. The must is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Attention, working people of America. It's Mr. Picket Man, and I'm back.